There must be some kind of use for a billion bad eggs. I can offer a few. Egg Fox News, egg the Rush compound, egg any and all politician who spouts one lie, egg the Hummer. I could go on forever, but you get the point. Yeah. And they're toxic. Hey, Rush, lick it up, buddy! Ooh, isn't that a Kiss song? I should have saved that for a bumper. Oh, well. Hey, the line's open if you want to jump in for the close of the program. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And we've got the Cossack. Hey, Cossack.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
Hanging in there. First and foremost, let me wish Agnes all the luck with tomorrow's procedure, and I hope to God she gets over it in a hurry.
The recuperation time is a bit of a booger, but everything, it's supposed to be fairly straightforward.
I got my fingers crossed. I know what it's like, and she has my best wishes.
Thank you. Thank you, Cossack.
Yeah. I'll be pulling for her. Secondly,
and you know what I'll do? I will try to. I don't know if she's listening right now, but if News Ninja Susan is listening, I'll try to shoot her an email as soon as Agnes is out of the OR, and I'll tweet it and all of that other stuff too, and that way the word can get around that we'll sound the all clear, as it were.
Sounds good, and also. My very, very most heartfelt condolences to Brian. We go through that with our companions, and it's not easy. It never is. They are our friends. They are our companions in good times and especially in bad. And, I know what he's going through, and yeah, I really feel for him.
It hurts.
Unfortunately, I know what it's like. And further, I was stuck in the doctor's office today, which meant I was stuck watching phone news and trying not to gag or get up and throw something at the TV screen. And they had that idiot Stossel on there. And he's got a brilliant idea. Instead of having these 9-day-long traffic jams like we have in China, we just need to do away with street signs. No more stop signs, no more stoplights.
By God, he's at least an honestly insane libertarian.
Does this man drive
Did he really say get rid of... Oh, my.
That's
precious.
I mean, seriously. We should have toll roads everywhere, and then they would take care of everything, and it would be perfect if only we privatized everything and have private toll roads everywhere you went. Because everybody knows the private sector knows how to take care of things. Really? Gee.
Yeah, that's especially true. You know, Pumpkinhead Boner was pissing and moaning earlier today about the fact that federal workers make twice what the private sector worker makes, and that has been accelerated.
Oh, that's bull crap.
Well, it is, but the fact of the matter, what he's complaining about is that the federal worker has not been able to be preyed upon by the so-called invisible hand of the free market.
Well, yeah.
And then there's the fact that he's just plain old-fashioned lying.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard this crap over and over and over again since I was a kid. I mean, I grew up in D.C. I'm telling you, this is nothing new. The thing is, people don't understand. The government workers do not get paid these fantastic salaries, except in places like Bella, California, where they were paying their the chairman of their county committee $800,000 a year.
Woo!
And this is in a place where the average salary is around $35,000 a year. And these people were, I mean, half the commission were paying themselves over $500,000 a piece.
Well, good work if you can get it, Cossack.
Yeah. But, I mean, my whole family works in civil service. I can tell you the pay is good, but it wasn't better than the private sector. The main thing is, if you got a job with the government, you kept it. Unless you were really a screw-off, you kept your job. You kept your benefits. You actually had a retirement fund to retire to. You couldn't lose your medical care. You couldn't have it cut back drastically. That's what you got for being a government employee. It wasn't a fantastic salary. It was just the fact that you were sure that you would have a job. And secondly, back to the mosque we go. Before that idiot Stossel got on, they were having a food fight between a liberal black professor who could barely get heard because they kept cutting him off, and this nitwit right-wing commentator who kept on screaming about the mosque. They want to build at Ground Zero. First of all, it's not near Ground Zero. It's in a different zip code, dummy.
Is it really a different zip code?
Yeah!
Jesus criminy.
I mean, you go two blocks in New York and you're in a different zip code. You know. And, you know, is this defacing Ground Zero any more than the strip club that's right across from it? I mean, literally right across the street from the hole in the ground is Ground Zero? There's a strip club.
Well, there's a religion out there, Cossack, where we want to honor those fallen heroes of 9/11 with pole dancing. That's actually a flying spaghetti monster church. Because remember, in the hereafter of the flying spaghetti monster religion, the hereafter is comprised of a beer volcano and a stripper factory.
I mean, the lack of actual thought that's being given to this is stunning to me. You know, it's just, how do people come up with this crap? And they're all over the imam because he said, well, you know, America isn't actually an innocent victim here. And the right wing Looney Tune went off on that. You know, how could he possibly say that? He wasn't saying that we deserve it, but he said, you know, some of what we have been doing may actually have led to that. You know, you piss people off enough, they will do strange things. And when he said that America has more blood on its hands, innocent Muslim blood on its hands than Al-Qaeda, and she went bug-eyed. How could he possibly say this? You know, they pointed out the half million dead babies under sanctions. Oh, but that's not our fault. That's Saddam's fault. And they weren't our sanctions. They were the United Nations sanctions, which we kept on screening, had to be renewed constantly. It was us and the Brits, and we were the only one. We were the motive force. That's the reason those babies died. You know, babies, like real ones instead of snowflake, frozen, quasi-maybe baby. Yeah, we actually killed over 500,000 of them. We were the proximate cause of their death. Does anybody, you know, want to think about that for half a second?
Nobody who's, well, you know.
And, to switch gears yet again, yeah, it's really strange. I remember when my family moved down here, Florida, when my parents retired. Gee, we had a congressman named Bob Slight, who was a Democrat. And oddly enough, everybody around here loved him to pieces because he brought home the bacon. You know, he's the guy that helped build the huge military bases around here and provided jobs for virtually everybody that lived here. And I seem to recall, you remember a guy named Claude Pepper?
Oh, I do, I do.
He was Florida, too. And if I'm not mistaken, he was an FDR Democrat.
I do think you are right. Didn't he walk the state at one point?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And now, all we see around here, all we hear around here, are these calls for conservatives. Like the other day, we're driving down the road, and here's some beat-up old pickup barely being held together with spit and baling wire with a, McCain-Palin sticker on the back. Now, how much more ignorant can you possibly be?
You know what? That's
economic class.
Oh, I know. No, Cossack, that's in the same vein. I love that one line from Don Henley's The Boys of Summer. Today I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. A little voice inside my head said, "Don't look back. You can never go back."
Mm-hmm.
McCain Palin on, yeah, same, only different, backwards, in reverse.
Well, like Henley said in another one of his songs, yeah, you don't see any luggage, you don't see any hearses with luggage racks.
No, or U-Hauls.
Yeah, and yet people seem to think that you take it all with you. You don't. You come into this world naked and squalling, and you usually leave the same bloody way. I mean, you know, that's something I gotta kind of think about, you know. Getting closer to it every day, and it's, you know, something to think about. You know. And what I don't understand is how all these people have so much hatred toward anyone else, you know. I got mine, screw you. Yeah. I clawed my way up here, and I'm bringing the ladder up after me, and by God, I will fight you tooth and nail for my position in the hierarchy. You know, I'm damned if I'm going to allow you, whoever you is, to have anything. And I think that's what's driving most of these people bat-eyed crazy is, oh my God, we got that black man in the White House. He's defiling the White House. Do you know why they call it the White House? Yeah, because they had to paint it with whitewash because after it got burned.
Yep.
Yeah, it was the president's mansion until then.
Yeah, it was built by slaves.
Yeah. I mean, God. And, you know, I have to say it again. One of the things I really, really hold the most against the Clinton-Gore mafia was they were the proximate cause of the Democrats selling it out to big money. They peddled the Democrats to make them more business friendly.
No, there's
we have a business. We have a business friendly party. It's called the Republicans. We don't need Republican light. We need a choice. I mean, that's crazy. We do not need a Republicanized Democratic Party. We need a clear choice. Hi, we're the Republicans. We're here to rob you blind and screw
you blue.
Process. Yeah. And screw you in the process. And the Democrats should be saying, hi, we're the Democrats. We're here to give you a hand and help you against those people.
Unfortunately,
that's not what we're getting.
That's not what we're getting. No. No, we're not.
No. We're getting, well, he's a Republican, and I'm Republican light.
Well, you know, I don't like painting with broad brushes, Cossack. And it's not fair to say that of the entire party, I don't think. You know, it's certainly fair to say that of a Ben Nelson. Of a number of members of the House, of a Mary Landrieu, you know, folks like that.
Yeah.
But again, my argument with regard to the Democratic Party is that the Democratic Party is what it is because, in part, a lot of us let it get there.
Yeah.
Because we forgot the value and the meaning of a primary process. We've waited around for other people to do the heavy lifting. I mean, I see it. I see it in to a certain extent in the things that I'm involved in. We need to do some political grow up. We've got to start running some candidates in primaries.
Yeah. Well,
because I mean, if you want the Democratic Party to be more progressive, it goes almost without saying, doesn't it, Cossack, that you need to have some progressive or liberal people running for office.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the problem is, for example, down here in the Democratic primary, we have Kendrick Meek, who is a corrupt machine politician. And he's being supported by every name in the Democratic Party. Whereas we have another candidate, a gentleman named Green, who is a self-made millionaire. He's a contractor. He's a liberal Democrat. He wants to turn Florida into the green power state. You know, to actually have things like solar power being used down here, which should have been done a long time ago, obviously. And yet, he's not going to win. It's going to be Kendrick Meek. It's going to be the machine politician. It's going to be the same garbage that we get, because that is the people, like Mary Land, what's your name, Missouri. Lincoln.
Oh, the Arkansas, Blanche, yeah.
Blanche Lincoln. Everybody stood up for dear Blanche there. And on top of that, that jackass, that idiot, Rahm Emanuel, is sitting here gloating over the fact, well, ha 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 ha, see, the union's wasted $10 million. Thanks a whole hell of a lot, you're a hell of a lot of help. You piece of, you know, that's also part of the problem. You have the party fighting against itself.
But okay, let me, and I'm not arguing, and I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. But we have problems within progressive circles. For instance, most of us out there, I would say a vast majority of us, have a great deal of respect for Alan Grayson.
Oh, yeah.
But on but with regard to our morals and our principles and our ethics, what do you do with an Alan Grayson and the fact that he is an Israel Uber Alles type?
Well, that
I mean, everything else about him is right. So, you know, is the answer that I cut him some slack on that? Or do we continue to advocate, or is that one of those closed mind, the turd in the punch bowl issues?
Well, it's a turd in the punch bowl, but when it's compared to what the alternatives are, I mean,
as crazy as it may seem, I still maintain a degree of sympathy. And maybe it isn't crazy. I don't know. I still have a degree of sympathy for Barack Obama. A significant degree of sympathy. And this is my own opinion, and I know there are others who disagree with me, and I'll get email about it. But I tend to think that if the man was left alone to do what he thought was right, you know, and could do soul searching over it, he would do things that we agree with. But as long as Rahm Emanuel is there, and a Howard Dean hater like Robert Gibbs, Larry Summers, Ben Bernanke, that other little economic weasel, Geithner, these are the people who are giving him advice. You know, Jesus, what an inept yo-yo he's got in Ken Salazar at Interior.
Exactly. Well, and this is the thing. I mean,
And maybe that's all Dave, you know, maybe at the end of the day, the one name I haven't mentioned is the one that should come first, David Axelrod.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I'm guessing like any president coming into the White House, he was presented with a list of people that would make for a good, these guys have an ideological fit with you. You know, they can work with you, sir. Because most of us don't have, you know, the America of 1805 don't exist anymore, where you come into the White House with a list of people that you've been working with for 30 years and you've fought in a revolution with them and you know that they've got your back and you've got theirs and we're going to get along. That doesn't happen anymore. Government's too big for that. Jesus, when James Madison was Secretary of State, he had to be, what was the original espionage budget? You know, $150? Because, you know, we were going to be ideologically pure and we weren't going to play that game. But the thing is, we were crawling with spies. British spies, French spies, German spies, Russian spies.
Spanish.
Spanish. Oh, yeah, don't forget them. And then we had our own. What was the general down in New Orleans name? He was an agent for the Spanish.
Yeah.
So, you know, all I'm trying to say is that, you know, we can't impose... Ideological purity is something we can talk about academically, but it isn't something that will ever come into play in the real world, I don't think.
True, but still, the thing is, if Barack Obama had wanted, he could have picked a few people.
Would it have been so awful to leave Howard Dean in charge of the DNC instead of that wet wash rag Tim Kaine? No, it wouldn't have been so awful. We might not be in the 2010 pickle we're in if Howard Dean had been running things.
Exactly. And, just to go back to an earlier topic real quick, where you have people like Stossel and the entire Republican Party and Limbaugh screaming about, you know, private enterprise does everything better and we need to privatize everything and we need to get government out of the way. Isn't that what happened in the Gulf? Wasn't BP basically running its own show when it blew up?
Yeah, signing its own reports.
Exactly. So where do they come up with this idea that private enterprise is always better than government? Government can't do anything, and private industry can do everything. Where did this, how do people manage to think these things when they see what goes on in the real world? Remember, it was Ford that built the flammable car. It was Chevy that built the pickup with the gas tanks on the outside of the frame. So if you happen to get T-boned,
goodbye.
You're barbecued. You know, this is private industry. So where's this bet better than government? Which at least government servants at least try to do their jobs, mostly. I mean, you have screw-ups everywhere, but in the main, I'd rather have a dispassionate civil servant deciding whether I get covered or not, as opposed to some greed head in a private company deciding. Because I know the way they're going to decide every single time, and it ain't going to be for me, ever.
Yep. Yep. Cossack, great conversation.
Yeah, it was fun. And once again, best of everything to Agnes. Got my fingers crossed.
Thanks. Like I said, I'll try to get stuff posted out and signal the all clear.
Sounds good.
All right.
Be looking for it.
Take care, Cossack.
All right, you too.
Bye now. The Cossack calling from North Florida. One more call and we're done. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, I couldn't resist.
Sandra.
Hey, so the operation is definitely happening tomorrow?
We got to be there at 6:45. I don't even know my name at 6:45, so.
Oh, God, but so there's a chance that Agnes might get out the day, huh?
We've heard that of other people having the same or similar procedure that, they don't want you under that roof any longer than they got to have you there.
No, well, you know, I got my, you know, I'm just thinking best thoughts for her, and I mean, hopefully if you get a chance, I know how it is, but if you could, like, give us the thumbs up in some manner, that would be great.
Yeah, like I said, I'll send a note to News Ninja Susan, and then I'll put something on Twitter, and Twitter will post over to my Facebook account, and,
I know it sounds like it's some sort of ordeal, but, I just hope that it all just goes textbook.
This surgeon is he's done good work before. He's worked on her in the past, and
she's got a good
degree of confidence in him, and that goes a long way.
No, that helps. I mean, really, yeah, yep. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Did you see the the home sales, that figure?
Yeah, don't look real good, does it?
Oh my God, 27%. And the thing is, it's like, I wish they would explain a bit more. They never talk about the inventory overhang. You know, existing home sales means that, you know, it's gone from a seller, you know, and it's ready to be on the market. But
right.
This overhang, this $18 million that I keep mentioning, that ain't even talked about. And don't you think, commonsensically, that would factor in this? You know what I mean? It's like,
it's another reason to think that the numbers are funny.
Well, the numbers are funny and they're really bad, but you seem to have this sort of gee willikers, oh wow, we didn't know type of air about it all, and it's like, well, why wouldn't you know when you have that kind of inventory at play? You know, when that inventory should be being used to deal with this huge homeless problem, but I guess that's a non-starter, right?
Oh, no. We're not going to put the boys under the bridge in a nice house in a nice subdivision. Come on, Sandra.
Well, no, I'm just sort of thinking, because the numbers are starting to get really quite scary. 20 million, who knows how many other the banks aren't mentioning. I mean, you know, because you can't really trust the mechanism anymore. It's broken, and all you get from the Obama administration on this housing is extend and pretend. So they'll be offering some more billion-dollar fake money loans for people who are, like, underwater. Why in the world would you go further into debt to refinance a home that's underwater, Bob?
Only if you were, you know, nuts.
That's a fool. That's just foolish. And so why aren't they putting their energies into getting crammed down or some way for the courts to deal with the principal? Because that is the only way anyone, you know, can get out from under this, is to attack the principal.
Yeah. No, as long as you're playing the interest game, you're losing.
Right. And so, I don't know. I just am sort of thinking, you know, the housing market seems to be, I don't know. I don't ever want to say anything irreversible, but it certainly looks to be like you should really just rent and maybe buy some foreign exchange dollars. I mean, I don't really know, but house ain't doing it.
Well, and that's because what we've seen, you know, again, going back to our conversation last night, Sandra, starting about Ronald Reagan, is you see these sustained and consistent attacks on areas where the middle class had reposed its wealth.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't enough that, you know, the Republicans were severely bothered by the fact that we had pensions that they couldn't get after. So the next thing you know, the pensions start leaking into 401ks so that stuff can, you know, go on the Wall Street roulette wheel. And then, you know, the housing bubble and the refi, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, it's not just people going out there and buying new houses or a second or a third house. You know, I remember a time, and it's slacked off considerably, but when it seemed like every second commercial was that guy in a dress with a mustache talking about how, I forget, you know, lost another one to Countrywide.
Right. Oh, no. It was just full.
And it was, you know, so between the bubble and the phony baloney games going on with credit default swaps and derivatives, and add into that the fact that, oh, look, the money's almost free. Refinance your home. You know, let's go get another mortgage. And what it was just another attack on one more place where the middle class had reposed what little bit left, a little bit remained of its wealth. And the last place on earth is Social Security.
Oh, yeah. No. And the thing is it all comes back to what we talked about before, where you have fake, no growth in wages. So you got to replace that with this easy credit so people can live like they're middle class when they really aren't.
Yeah, but guess what? That easy credit
is gone.
Well, it ain't exactly. I saw a story and just sort of went mat in my little head, because I thought this stuff was supposed to be getting taken care of. Headline: credit card rates hit highest level in 9 years.
Rates for what?
Interest rates continue to tumble for the U.S. Treasury companies and home buyers alike, but for a large portion of 381 million U.S. credit card accounts, you know, my God, there's only 300 million people. Borrowing rates have been moving only one way up. New credit card rules that took effect Sunday limit banks' ability to charge penalty fees. They come on top of rule changes earlier that blah, blah, blah. Average interest rate in the second quarter on existing cards reached 14.7%, up from 13.1%. So, you know, to a certain extent, Congress took away the credit card company's ability to, rape you with fees, and the credit card companies are responding by jacking up rates.
Oh, yeah, well, no, I mean, until there's some sort of, which they tried to do, of course, and it was lobbied away, but the cap, you know, you never hear any discussion on ever touching these high-ass interest rates, which we who are in a capitalist system are subjected to. mind you, the big banks are getting money at zero.
Right, and that's the whole point.
It's so disgusting.
When the big banks are getting it at nigh zero, and they're charging credit card rates upward, you know, and interest compounded hourly, of, you know, 14 and 15%, my God, what a windfall.
No, it's incredible. And it's so, and the thing is, you know, everything is kind of somewhat deflationary, which is a problem for us again. We want inflation at this point. But the rich, they don't want it. They want it to stay because debts are great for them, right? I mean, the system is just so sick. But anyway, I just was, the home, those, that home sale plunge really was like, wow, you know, because I'm so, like I said, I never thought we were in a recession, and it certainly never ended. And I hear more and more people saying that, well, maybe we never got out of the recession.
Maybe it was a depression.
And it's still dipping. So, I don't know. I just sort of...
Well, I'm fascinated by it, Sandra, because... you know, on the one hand, when people, you know, like we said last night, 75% of the people have fallen out of the protection program that was set up to help people in foreclosure because it's not helping. On the other hand, you've got these numbers that you're talking about this evening, and then we look at the credit card rates. Well, doesn't that kind of tell you that the banks don't want to loan money for homes? And why would you? Because that's going to be, what, 4, 5%, 6 maybe? But you can get 14 on credit cards forever?
Well, no, you know, I mean, look at where all the home loans are originating now. It's courtesy of Fannie and Freddie, isn't it? I mean, you know, that's a problem. Anyway, listen, so in Florida, that Meeks is leading Green by a huge amount, which I think is quite interesting.
CNN has projected him the winner.
So much for your money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always good. I'm always happy when they give away their money and don't get elected. Love it. Keep doing it.
And it'll be Rubio, Meeks, and Charlie Crist.
Whatever. I'm quite happy to see Green go away. You know, interesting. All that money. I guess people aren't really moved. That's good to see.
I hope it works out the same way for Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman. And that goofy McMahon woman in Connecticut, spend lots.
I want Meg to spend. Oh, good Lord, she needs to spend more and more. Because, see, I could be wrong, which is, you know, has happened in California because it's so weird, the elections here. But a lot of people are just not that keen on the way this rich lady is coming across, Bob. So.
But my God, what the numbers in the boxer race? It's almost margin of error, but that's Fiorina, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
And she's up like 5 points.
Well, see, I don't know. See, I'm having a hard time seeing boxer throwing the towel at this point. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, this is when it's going to start. Come Labor Day, you know, that's when the gloves come off.
Yeah, because you don't realize how hated that that Carly Fiorina, she is in parts of California, especially Silicon Valley. She's hated for what she did. That runs deep. So I don't know. I'd be surprised if she wins, actually. More surprised if she wins than that Whitman person.
No, but they both give me the shudders.
Well, no, but it was, remember, in California, to be honest, the governorship is one of the more weaker executives in the country.
Yeah, kind of like the Texas governor.
It's very weak because there's other constitutional offices in this state. But anyway, listen, I know your show is over with, but I just wanted to send out my best to Agnes, and I guess I'll look out for you later in the week.
All right, I'm hoping I'll be back Thursday night. Thanks, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Take care. Bye now. And thus endeth the lesson. That's the end of the program for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. All your phone calls. New caller. Yay. All your ideas, all your comments, your emails. Just thanks. Thanks for your continued support of the program. There are places out there that are trying to raise six-digit figures to stay alive. And we're trying to, we're sweating our follicles out trying to get to $2,500 by August the 31st. And we are about $1,100 away. Again, if everybody who listened to this program who was able to do so sent $10, I could shut up for months on end. We shall see. We shall see. Thank you to those of you who are able and do contribute. And like I said, thank you for your ideas, your comments, your phone calls, your emails, your participation in the chat room. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Ain't none of us getting paid. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com is doing more and more magnificent work. I think we've got some stuff that we can delve into in a big way in the coming days. Something that I haven't even touched on yet. Reverbo is our op-ed columnist at A Cavalcade of Crazy, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox in Australia is our chief engineer, our webmaster, web designer, and the fire putter outer. And Ben Birch, on his way back from vacation, if he's not back already, makes all the streaming happen at whiterosesociety.org. You know, part of the reason we upped the monthly to $2,500 is so that I can just take care of the White Rose bill right off the top. We're about $1,100 out, like I said. Thanks, everybody. And thanks also go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Please remember Judy Bonds in your thoughts and your prayers. She continues in her struggle against cancer. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is Tuesday. It is the 24th day of August. We are fast winding August down, just 1 week left in August, and 1 week to pull into our August fundraising goal so that we can keep the lights on both at White Rose Society and here at the Horn. We are, it seems like we just kind of live here. It's that situation where we're a little bit like Jerry Reed, a long way to go and a short time to get there. I mentioned last night that we ran the fundraising up to by today it's about $1,400 for the month. That means we've got $1,100 to raise in 1 week.
going to be close. Yeah, no kidding. It's going to be close. The PayPal button is over there at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. So is the snail mail address. But at least that weird buzzy thing that was going on that had me sounding like I was talking through a comb that was over that was wrapped in wax paper seems to be gone. You know me, I'm not a big fan of kazoo radio. So we'll just, you know, count our blessings along those lines. Plenty to keep us busy this evening. And before I do anything, I want to do this. Just because, you know, we're all family here. I know you have heard Brian on the show, Brian from New Hampshire. And I wanted to let you know that I got a note from Brian, and I just want to share this with you. He said, Bob, my best buddy and best pet ever, Casper Moore, passed from this earth earlier today in the morning of August 21st, 2010. And I feel so very, very empty without my best boyo, Coach Ski Boyo, Casper Moore. At least now he's with his big brother, Sasha Moore, my 130-pound Samoyed, who died in my arms on February 13th, 1995, just one day after Sasha's 12th birthday. Sasha was born on Lincoln's birthday. Casper was born on New Year's Day. And I understand. I understand completely, having experienced something similar, the sense of loss that Brian feels, and I wanted to share his sense of loss with the rest of you, because I know that you will sympathize and you will send your best thoughts his way, as he so often has done within our family, for those of us as we travel down this road. Our best and warmest thoughts to Brian upon the loss of his dear friend and family member, Casper. You're in our thoughts, Brian. You are in our thoughts. Program reminder, no show tomorrow. Agnes will be going in for her surgery. And as a consequence, I'm not going to be reachable all day long or all night long. Okay? And you know what? It'll just be this show rerunning. I'm just going to rerun this show because, well, hopefully it'll only be a one-night miss. If it's something more, I'll try to get you I'll try to get you some sort of an update. But don't fret. Everything should be okay. The surgery is routine in nature, but it will be somewhat debilitating. Anytime they blow you up, pump you up with gas, and go in with scopes and knives and lights and cameras and action, what's the commonly accepted medical term for surgery on the body? Yeah, insult. It is a surgical insult. And so with such surgical insults comes downtime, and I'm not going to leave Agnes. I'm just not going to. Can't make me. Nor would you. You, in fact, understand. Now, where to go? Where to go this evening? This reasoning to decide that embryos are people, and embryos can't be researched upon, and that even though a stem cell is not attached to a particular embryo, it still counts as the destruction of an embryo, and therefore it cannot be, in short, Judge Royce Lamberth, Reagan appointee, put the screws to every sufferer from brain injury, every sufferer of paralysis and spinal cord injury, every sufferer of Parkinson's disease, every person who has hope of the medical science and medical future that is offered by embryonic stem cell research in the United States, Judge Royce Lamberth, Reagan appointee, ideologue. Well, guess what? He's just screwed all of you. And it's all about the precious little baby embryos. One of the plaintiffs in the case is the Alliance Defense Fund, a notorious Christianist organization that is decidedly homophobic, among other things. They've litigated a lot against gay people. One gets the idea that perhaps, what's this creep's name? Marine Corps Commandant General James Conway would be comfortable breaking bread with the Alliance Defense Fund. It is, that's another story entirely. But I thought you might, there's a wonderful article over at The Guardian today, guardian.co.uk, by Michael Tomasky. It is entitled Stem Cells, Politics, and the Law. And it's a little bit of background on Judge Royce Lamberth and this particular travesty of judicial activism. I mean, Jesus, if the other side can call it judicial activism when our side actually supports written legislation. But, we can call it judicial activism when the other side actively works against, you know, sick people, suffering people, miserable people, people who deserve better than the lights of a tired, old, worn-out, conservative ideologue creep like Judge Royce Lamberth. We can call him a judicial activist, too, don't you think? Yes, I do. I'm glad you do, too. Michael Tomasky writing, or quoting from the Washington Post, the ruling stunned scientists and other advocates of the research, which has been hailed as one of the most important advances in medicine in decades because of its potential to cure many diseases, but has been embroiled in controversy because the cells are obtained by destroying days-old embryos. This is devastating, absolutely devastating, said Amy Comstock Rick, immediate past president of the Coalition for Advancement of Medical Research, a group of patient organizations that's been lobbying for more federal funding. Well, yes, it is. But still, that language is a little too squishy, a little too wishy-washy, if you will. Because it's not just devastating, it's wicked. It's evil. And sometimes we get to use, even those of us who don't follow organized religion, you know, that's another thing. While it is true that morality and ethics are not predicated upon the adherence to any set of religious guidelines or dogma, so too the identification of evil, the identification of wicked conduct, is not predicated upon adherence to any particular religious creed. And in light of what that research was being used for, no, you know, for once, scientific research wasn't being used to create bigger, badder, longer erections or bigger, badder bombing explosions. No, stem cell research was doing what we like to think is the best and noblest calling of science, and that is advancing the well-being of the human community. Naturally, a Republican can't tolerate that. That is frustrating in the extreme. Like I can't even begin to describe. By the way, yeah, the stream buffered up and went out for a couple of seconds there. Fortunately, we got the, and see, there it goes again. That's just weird. There's nothing out here that should be using using the interweb tubes. Very strange indeed. But, well, if we have those problems, it'll just be another night in paradise. But the fact of the matter is, Judge Royce Lamberth is not some guy who exists in a vacuum, and neither are these plaintiffs. To give the devil his due, Judge Royce Lamberth threw out these particular plaintiffs, threw them out of court, said they didn't have standing to sue. And this is where the overarching importance of talking about a case like this comes in. Because the fact of the matter is, Judge Royce Lamberth did do the right thing. He threw these dumbass right-wing, evil-gelical, stupid, snake-handling, floor-rolling, strychnine-swigging idiots out of court. Them and their snowflake babies. And we don't want embryonic research. We want people to adopt a little frozen embryo. Oh, yes, Jeebus, we do. Oh, they're going to be such beautiful babies. Bull. Do you understand? I hate it when I say that. But of all the plaintiffs in this case, the Christian Medical Association and the Alliance Defense Fund, all of these freaks, not one of them had an ownership claim to the embryos. Not one. Because you see, if it was your embryo, and you said, stop. Judge. They're using me and my wife's embryo there. And we didn't give them permission to pull no stem cells from that embryo. We was a-gonna implant it someday when we can afford to raise little Junior. Hallelujah. I would argue that if that person had gone into court, they would have standing. And standing, of course, is defined as the right to be in court in the case in front of the judge. And no. The judge would have to say, you know what, that's your embryo. They have, stop it. Go find another embryo. But that wasn't the case. These were third parties who wanted to inject their religion and foist it on you. And on people sitting in wheelchairs and lying prone in beds, unable to move. They wanted to force how they feel about their religion onto the rest of us. You know, the ones of us who are not engaged in this duel to the death between tastes great and less filling. This inane debate over how many angels or genies or what have you can dance on the head of an invisible pin. And I despise them for that. I can't speak for anyone who suffers from anything that might be someday solved by stem cell research. But still, thinking of those people, I despise these fundamentalist right-wing, evangelical, phony baloney, fake followers of Christ for the way that they inject themselves upon us. And it's all around us. There's no getting away from it. It's in your school system. It's in your military. It's in science. It's in medicine. There is nothing, nowhere in the social or political sphere that fundamental evangelical, phony baloney, fake followers of Christ, Christianists, will not dare to inject themselves so that they can prove that their morality is better than your morality, and that they know better for someone sitting unable to walk for the last, yea, verily, 20 years or 10 or 5 or maybe just yesterday, that they know better for them than science itself. This is the constant struggle of humanity against superstition, against hate. It's not new. These modern Christianist phony baloney followers of Christ are no different than those who railed against the dissection of a human corpse 500, 600, and 700 years ago by people who actually wanted to know what was going on inside the human body. Almost everybody in the medical community is uniform in their statement that human stem cell research is the best hope that humanity has for the solution to a lot of disease processes. And at the end of the day, that's probably what's wrong. Because every step forward that medical science and science generally takes is one step away from the superstition and the fear and the paranoia and the twisted mental illness that drives the religion industry. But that's not even where I was going. Oh, no. Because, to be fair, as I said, Judge Royce Lamberth, right-wing Reagan appointee freak that he is, he bounced these dumbasses out of court because it weren't their embryo. They had no standing to sue. They didn't have a dog in the hunt, as we like to say here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. But guess what? They appealed. Yes, they appealed. From the D.C. trial court level, they appealed to the D.C. Circuit, where a three-judge panel heard their appeal. That three-judge panel? Well, it was comprised of, see if you remember these names from the Rogues Gallery. It was comprised of Janice Rogers Brown, Brett Kavanaugh, and Douglas Ginsburg. Does an American... No, we don't. I'll answer the question before I ask it, but I'll go ahead and ask the question. Does an American have the right going into a judicial process to at least have one person from the other political party hear the argument? Because in the case of this appeal, these right-wing fundamentalist freaks took their appeal before three right-wing fundamentalist freaks. Janice Rogers Brown, Brett Kavanaugh, and Doug Ginsburg. You remember Doug Ginsburg? And here's the funny part. He's the normalist of the three. Doug Ginsburg was at one point elevated to the a nomination to the Supreme Court. Ronnie Reagan did that. But Doug Ginsburg rescinded or rejected or stepped away or whatever you do with an appointment to the Supreme Court when he admitted that he had done smoked the marijuana. Smooth. Yeah. Dope smoking kept Doug Ginsburg off of the Supreme Court, and perhaps that's the last time that our weird-ass fetishized the prohibition on that naturally occurring plant on the planet has done any good. Yeah, this is I guess Ginsburg's a fairly common name. He's a G-I-N-S-B-U-R-G Ginsburg. He's certainly no Allen Ginsburg. No. But Doug Ginsburg turned out to be a dope smoker So he wasn't allowed onto the Supreme Court, but he sat right there with that lifetime appointment on the D.C. Circuit. I don't know. I guess no. He, what's his name, that mushmouth freak from Alabama, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood, wasn't on the Senate Judiciary Committee at the time, I don't think. I'm sure he would have gotten Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood. He would have earned his ire as well. Because you got to remember that the Republican, you know, minority, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee once famously said, "You know, I used to think that the Ku Klux Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana." But bear in mind, the appeal, these right-wing freaks' appeal, went to a three-judge panel comprised entirely of right-wing ideologues. And the other two were real Lulus. And maybe that's the larger part of this whole the discussion. Because of those two, you have Brett Kavanaugh. Who was Brett Kavanaugh? Well, Brett Kavanaugh was associate counsel during the Ken Starr pornographic Whitewater zipper investigation that cost us $70 million. And as soon as he got done being associate counsel for Ken Starr's cleanest chase, he was rewarded with a cushy job in Ken Starr's firm. Not content to rest upon his laurels, however, he went on to be active in the Cheney-Bush, Bush-Cheney, who can tell, campaign in 2000. And his loyalty was rewarded with a plum assignment on the D.C. Circuit. But then, and this is where the rubber meets the road, then there's Janice Rogers Brown. You remember Janice Rogers Brown? Every time I think of her, I can't remember her name until I see it again. But she came out of Berkeley, I believe. And once upon a time, she was some sort of a liberal or even an avowed Maoist. I think that was the going. And the Democrats in the Senate said, "Whoa, wait a minute. Stop it." They looked at George W. Bush and said, "You didn't really send this freak to us, did you?" You know, in a moment of absolutely unbridled and unsuspected spine. Yeah. Janice Rogers Brown, she nasty. Mm-hmm. Because Janice Rogers Brown is one of those political chameleons whose political philosophy has changed over the years with the, you know, she's literally been blown along by the winds of political change. And, you know, if Nazis invaded tomorrow, she'd be one of the first in the street waving a swastika flag. If it was communist, I'm sure she's got a hammer and sickle in the closet. You know what I mean? She's one of those. But as it turns out, she's a right hardcore right-wing freak. And the Senate was not going to let her through back when her nomination was under consideration. But she was one of those groups. She was a member of that group of Bush appointees back when, do you remember this? I do. Do you remember when Bill the Cat Killer Frist was the Senate Majority Leader, and he would come to the floor of the Senate every day and say, "All we want is an up or down vote on these fine pipples."
All we want is an up or down vote. If you disagree with it, just vote no. We just want an up or down vote. Stop this endless filibustering. I swear, as God is my witness, I swear I'll go nuclear on your ass.
That's what Bill the Cat Killer Frist threatened to do. And what he meant by going nuclear was that he was going to destroy the filibuster. And a lot of us hollered, by God, make him do it. Don't run away from the bully. Stand up to the bully and punch him back in the nose. And make them do it and then make them regret it. Because someday we'll have the Senate again. And we will make them eat things that they never dreamed of. And looking back, guess who it turns out was correct? Yeah, us. But we didn't stand up to the bully. No, no, we didn't. We formed the Gang of 13, or Gang of 14, and it included people like Joe Lieberman, and Ben Nelson, and Mary Landrieu, and Robert Byrd, and some other senators who said that,
well, the Democratic contingent, we promise we won't filibuster any judicial nominee ever. We promise. Because we want fair play, and we want everybody to have a fair shot at the American dream.
You know, cue the Leave It to Beaver music. And so the Democrats rolled over and got their tummies scratched, or they expected to get their tummies scratched. What, of course, happened was that the stump licker bunch of the right wing in the Senate came by and gave him a few well-deserved swift kicks. Get along now, I'll kick you again. Get off the porch, old blue. And the Democrats scampered off the porch, and lo and behold, Janice Rogers Brown, hardcore right-wing ideologue of the worst stripe, found herself on the D.C. circuit, and arguably on a career path to someday maybe be on the Supreme Court when a Republican's back in office again, and you know, Fat Tony Scalia or Alito or Predator Eyes Roberts or the Slappy Thomas goes to their long home. Janice Rogers Brown went to the D.C. Circuit. So, what happened? Well, the Democrats behaved in good faith and rolled over to get their belly rubbed and got their belly buttons peed in instead. Right? Right? And for the Democrats, well, the Democrats, one of the problems that we have, one of the reasons that the plaintiffs got a hearing before an ideologically pure, ideologically attuned panel in the D.C. Circuit is because there are at least two openings on the D.C. Circuit that remain unfilled because the Republican Party will not let Barack Obama's nominees go do the job for which they were appointed.
Can't let no left-wing ideologue go into the courts!
And all of that for the good of the nation BS from that Gang of 13 hasn't been heard from since last the Republicans took it out behind the barn while carrying an axe handle all along the way. If you know what I mean. And so what happened was that the right-wing judge, actually threw out the case for lack of standing, and they appealed it to the D.C. Circuit, where we've got a scarcity of Democratic appointees so that a fair hearing might be had. And the appeal was heard by three right-wing ideologues who said, "Why, heavenly days! Just because they don't have no reasonable, rational association or affiliation with the case, and just because it ain't their embryos in the first place, ain't no reason they can't clog up the courts. While they're standing up for poor little innocent, voiceless, powerless embryos." And they found themselves reinstated in the case. And with them reinstated in the case, Judge Royce Lamberth was free to be the... he let his right-wing freak flag fly. I can say phrases like that because I am a trained professional radio host. They let his right-wing freak flag fly. And ruled that embryos are involved in stem cell research because embryos are involved in stem cell research because embryos are involved in stem cell research. Ray Charles is God. And there you have it. There you have it. And science takes a back seat to thousand-year-old superstition and mental illness and paranoia, which is a mental illness. I guess I repeated myself. Whew. Don't it suck to be us? Wouldn't it be nice to have people on our side? Imagine if we had called Bill the Cat Killer Frist's bluff. Imagine the legislation that would have gotten passed in the last year and a half or so. Imagine the Senate transformed into an actual legislating body instead of a bill-killing body. Imagine the Senate actually able to do the bidding of the people of the United States of America. Amazing, isn't it? But there's one more wrinkle. Just one more wrinkle, because you know what? If you can count on the Republican Party for anything, it is hypocrisy and irony. This whole case is about protecting the poor little innocent embryos. Poor little embryos. They could be part of a loving white family somewhere and raised as Southern Baptists. Glory, hallelujah. Long as they're white embryos, mind you. All worked up about the embryos to the point of being willing to make people suffer for generations on end. But like I said, if there's anything a Republican will do, it is engage in some hypocrisy. I offer you a pair of politicians from Rhode Island. One, a so-called Democrat by the name of Peter Palumbo, and he's a conservative Democrat, and a conservative Republican named Joseph Trillo. He's a Republican. They're hard at work on a tough immigration law that'll just make Arizona look like a walk in the park. It'll make 1070 look like an amnesty bill. You've heard of anchor babies, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've decided they've got an even bigger, or depending on how you look at it, smaller problem in Rhode Island.
Dan Brewer is about to have some guests, two state representatives from Rhode Island, one Democrat, one Republican are headed to Arizona. Why? Well, the state representatives want to talk about illegal immigration. Joining us now, Rhode Island State Representative Joseph Trullo. He is the Republican, and State Representative Peter Palumbo, a Democrat. Good evening, both of you.
Hi, Greta.
Good evening, Greta.
All right, let me start with you, Peter. Tell me about your illegal immigration statute and what you're proposing and why you want to go to Arizona to talk to the governor.
Okay, well, I've been working on this issue in Rhode Island along with Representative Trullo in a bipartisan effort since 2008.
This is the Republican.
And, there's nothing such as a border state anymore. Even though we're not on the border, Rhode Island has a unique set of problems.
Even though we're barely a state.
Somewhere in the vicinity of 40,000 plus illegal aliens in Rhode Island. And we have a don't ask, don't tell policy in this state. Or we did prior to this governor and his executive order. So we have our issues. It's costing us somewhere between $150 to $350 million a year taking care of these illegal aliens. We need to address the issue, as border states do, and we put the Arizona bill in last year. Unfortunately, we did it late, and we want to go down and talk to the governor and find out what the problems are with the legislation so maybe we can strengthen it from what she has to offer.
Yeah, that's what it needs. It needs to be strengthened. Oh, you blamed.
Offer.
Representative Trullo, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, you're supposed to meet with Governor Brewer.
Now, she's sitting there with a conservative Democrat, but so far she's really not interested in hearing from anything but the Republican. But, you know, that's Greta.
About September 9th, what are you going to ask her?
Well, what we really want to see is, for me, it's important to sort of see, feel, and touch the environment of how serious the problem is.
You know, she's a beautiful blonde lady, and what we want to do is we want to see, feel, and touch.
Problem is, especially in a border state, but we also want to find out what they plan on doing.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was the Democrat. He's the one who wants to see, feel, and touch.
To modify, if anything, to modify the law that was put in so that when we reintroduce the new legislation in this upcoming session, that we wouldn't experience the same problems that they might have, that they might have already experienced with their legislation.
But the question is, really, when you get down to it, what kind of problems might Rhode Island have that Arizona doesn't have?
So if there's any redraft in the planning, hopefully we can have an insight into that.
Well, it's sort of interesting because this truly is bipartisan. One of you gentlemen is a Republican. One of you gentlemen is a Democrat.
That is the true meaning of bipartisan. One of you is a Democrat in name only, and the other of you is a troglodytic, knee-walking, mouth-breathing, repiglican freak. That is truly bipartisan.
Is this sort of unique on this particular issue, or do you guys work together typically in your state?
Well, we've worked together on several issues, but this happens to be an Asian population in the state. We give them free health care if they make under $25,000 a year. We don't ask them whether they're legal or whether they're illegal. They can walk into any one of our hospitals.
If they make under $25,000 a year, we give them the free health care. Never mind the fact that free health, you know, they couldn't have health care any other way. And I don't want I don't want that fella who's over there cutting my lawn. I don't want him getting sick and, you know, not being able to cut my lawn, because the last time I had to push my mower, I had some of those angina pains that the doctor was telling me about, because I've got some of the best health care in the United States because the people of the state of Rhode Island pay for it for my dead ass.
They get uncompensated care, and then we reimburse the hospital. So it's costing us a lot of actual dollars in terms of what our state budget is, but it's also costing a lot of jobs and other problems.
Greta, we have something in Rhode Island.
Shut up, Greta. Because he's about, you know, the repiglick in here, Mr. Trillo, is about to explain the much larger problem that Rhode Island has that might actually be a much smaller problem depending on how you look at it. Get back to it there, Joseph Trillo. Share with us. Come on, talk amongst yourselves.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I want to hear from you. Go ahead, you tell me.
We have, you know, we've...
Hey, Greta, why can't you move your face?
We've all heard of Anka babies. We have something unique to Rhode Island, and they're called Anka embryos.
Anka embryos! Did you hear that? They got the Anka embryos in Rhode Island. But that's to be expected because, you know, Rhode Island is the smallest of all the states. Therefore, it would have the smallest of all the illegal immigrant problems, and that would be your Anka embryos.
And what it is, a policy that we have in the state of Rhode Island, if you're an illegal alien woman and you're pregnant and you come to Rhode Island and you get to the Department of Human Services.
Because, you know, Rhode Island is just covered up with signs saying, hey, illegal alien pregnant lady, this way to the Department of Human Services.
First thing you have to do is tell them that you're an illegal alien woman and you're pregnant. And
in English, mind you.
Department of Human Services will offer you...
Yo soy illegal alien el pregnento, you know, to the Department of Human Services.
Do you want Blue Cross, United, or Neighborhood Health? And then what they do is they offer him four...
You know, he's getting an extra $25,000 for saying Blue Cross. That's the free market.
$150 a month on a card... for him to spend money, and you tell him, wait a second, don't spend that on food, though, because we're going to give you another $275 a month to spend on food.
You know, those pregnant illegal alien ladies out there with the Anka embryos and eating high on the hog for $275 a month. You know, that goes a lot. You can eat a lot of beans on $275 a month. Don't eat it all in one place, lady.
So we have policies that are very generous in the state to illegal aliens. And if we address these, a lot of these incentives...
Yeah, that $275 a month, that's generous. That's all kinds of generous. You know, for that $275 a month, they can have peanut butter and jelly tortillas. And that way they can come to work and they can swab out my toilets and they can take care of my babies and they can mow my lawn. And if I want to do a little work around the house, I just drop down to the Home Depot there and I can hire them for maybe $2-3 an hour and there'll be a crew of 20 show up and it'll be amazing the work they do. That's why we're so generous with them. But I'm here to tell you that that generosity to them Anka embryos has got to end.
They would self-deport as they are in other cities and towns and states throughout the U.S.
All right, September 9th or so is the date that you meet with the governor. I hope that both of you come back on September 9th. We can do a remote interview from there. So, gentlemen, I hope you'll join us after you've met with the governor.
Great.
Nice.
Thank you very much, Greta.
Thank you.
I'm so glad we could come and tell you about the Anka embryos. Isn't there a little bit of a disconnect here? Either we love the embryos or we hate the embryos. Look, you know me, I'm always the one looking for compromise, I'm always looking for the middle ground. Maybe the Republicans could just admit they love the embryos as long as they're nice little white embryos. The brown embryos, not so much. You know, call me crazy, because I certainly don't adhere to any official organized religious doctrines, but the last I checked, the book that the Bible thumpers rely on so much, the one that they spend all the time thumping instead of reading, the last time I checked, there's language in there about, I was sick and ye comforted me. I was hungry and ye fed me. Right, and if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. Yeah, well, you know, that Jesus Christ, he was an anchor embryo too one time, you know. Well, maybe not. He may have been a full-blown zygote or maybe a fetus when the Holy Spirit implanted it in that little virgin teenager when she got raped. It seems to me that determining benefit eligibility based upon the unborn is kind of a pro-life policy. Isn't it? I don't know. Sure seems like it. So there we are. That's the beginning of the program. We have apparently a little bit of we've got a little bit of a conflict in the Republican Party. Jesus God, if Greta Sestrin puts her lips together like the whistle, her ears probably wiggle. I know that every time she raises her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up. Are we for the embryos or against the embryos? It's a tough question. Michael, write in real quick from Sebastopol, California. I thought he said Inca embryos. I don't know. I don't speak Rhode Island. Jeepers. Inca. Aztec embryos. Yeah. Mayans. So that's where we start for the evening. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
So happy I wanna be free.
so happy I don't want to be free. 10cc, from a long, long, long time ago. A highly underappreciated band. Good morning, Judge. This is The Horn, and, well, let's see. Enough screwing around. Well, a couple of emails real quick. Some kind words coming in for Brian. William writing in, let Brian know I'm sorry for his loss. He has to be one of the best callers of all time. He has so much to say. It's never an easy thing to lose a friend and a part of the family. And as well, Jim writes in, who is just a tremendous friend of animals. He says, Casper, in memoriam, please accept my heartfelt condolences. I believe our furry friends are truly angels sent from above. Indeed. Indeed. Now we go to the phones. By the way, you know the email address, right? Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is it me?
It is you.
It is me, Bob. This is Julie. I'm from Minnesota.
Well, hey, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. I thought maybe we should talk about some things about Minnesota.
Oh, do let. I never having been there, but I love the place.
Well, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with myself right now. But anyway, I just wanted to say hello to everybody. I have been listening to the show via podcast for quite some time now, and this is the first time I've listened live, and it's the first time I've ever called into a radio program.
I generally recognize voices, and I didn't recognize yours, so I'll verify that.
Well, and you might not recognize a Minnesota accent. I don't really have one, but I can put one on if you want.
I do love them. You know, that's one of the few reasons that I used to shop with Land's End is I got an upper Midwest accent when I called.
I could put my mom on if you'd like. So I haven't gotten caught up since since the night that you were talking about Amy Klobuchar.
Yes.
And I did a little research, and oddly enough, I wanted to see, you know, like, why she would have any interest in it and so on and so forth. So if you've already gone over this, just let me know.
No, we haven't. I'm really anxious to hear this answer.
Well, I am, you know, I was interested, too, because I've been watching her, and she's getting a little dino. She's getting a little dino, and I think it's because Franken came in.
And gave her leave or ideological space to move to the right?
Exactly, and I think
that,
you know, it can be used. I think what she's doing is she's kind of playing a game where she's going to kind of hold back and support really safe legislation and stuff, and then wait for him to make a fool of himself, and so then she can, you know, she can use that polarization as leverage to be reelected. So what I think is interesting about it is I found this really creepy website, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's called teachcoal.org. Yeah, it's really gross. It has all of these nasty, like, lesson plans and things that you can use. It's for teaching kids about coal and how great it is. And, but there's an interesting thing on there called, what is your state's role in coal? And it looks so happy and innocent. So I looked up, you know, Minnesota, and I know we don't have, we don't have coal here. We have something else which is really nasty, which is, taconite from iron ore up on the Iron Range of Minnesota, but anyway, there's five things here that's pretty quick, but the number one thing is, the combined direct and indirect contributions of the coal industry to Minnesota's economy are more than $2 billion. Using more than 19 million tons, Minnesota ranks 20th in coal use. About 62% of the electricity used in Minnesota is produced by coal. Minnesota does not produce coal. Minnesota has 13 coal-fired power plants, which is actually incorrect. We actually have, like, 40-some.
The big difference between those two.
Exactly. But, you know, when you teach coal, you don't have to use the facts. You know?
Yeah, no.
Like those little happy dancing coal nuggets on Rachel Maddow's show?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The coal nugget carolers, oh, I remember them well.
Exactly.
Of course, here in West Virginia, we have coal ringtones for our cell phones, too.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, isn't it?
Great. We just have Garrison Keillor.
Oh, is he? Okay. I was gonna like break down in a little lump, a little just whimpering mass in the corner if you were gonna tell me that the Garrison was tied up with the coal mob.
Oh God, no, not as far as I know, anyway. So I thought that was kind of interesting, but I have written her letters before, and I wrote her another letter. So.
Well, you know, I've been at an event. She considers herself a progressive senator.
Yeah,
which, you know, I prefer the word liberal. You know, I'm just one of those that wants to get up in their face and punch back. But, she's been at events that I've been to in D.C. and so forth. And, you know, she makes all the right mouth noises about liberal things and progressive things and how we've got to set America back to rights. When I read that article and saw that she had, and, you know, I understand the political dynamic. Jay Rockefeller said, hey, Amy, write a check. And Amy wrote a check.
Yeah.
But still, if you're going to be a progressive, tell me if I'm wrong here. I mean, really, please. If you're going to be a progressive, isn't one of the core factors to being a progressive the fact that you don't consider yourself as living inside a vacuum and everybody else exists for your benefit?
I think you're right. I'd go a little bit further. I'd say that it would mean, if the root word is progress, and that you would progress away from the status quo and the way of doing things.
Amen to that.
Definitely not what she's doing.
I
like her. I do. I like her, but it's not enough anymore.
Well, I liked her, and I would like to go on liking her, but this took a whole lot of the like out of my universe for her because she basically, money is a vote. Money is a conscious decision. Money is ethical, an ethical choice and a moral choice. And she, by giving money to Joe Manchin, approved of what's being done to my neighbors and my friends and my family here in Appalachia. And I can't forgive that. That's like coming up and shooting my dog on the porch.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know if she knows that, but, you know.
Well, I reminded her. I hope that some other people have, too. I mean, she's. You know, like I said, I like her. I think she's fine, but I really think that she's waiting. You know, she's slipping into the pockets of the the money handers, and she's I think she's really just waiting for Franken to fall on his face, and I hope he doesn't. I really hope he doesn't.
He's proving himself quite studious. Everybody expected him to come in and start doing one-liners on the floor of the Senate. But, you know, the guy's got a math degree from Harvard.
Yeah.
You don't just chuckle your way through that.
Mm-hmm.
That's that kind of math that I can't even think about doing that involves Greek, old Greek letters and stuff.
Me neither. Okay, so, well, thankfully, when I was around here, we still had good education, but, So, in addition to, Ms. Klobuchar, we've got some other stuff to worry about here, too. We've got some, we've got the Cook Industries here.
Oh.
You know, they're big here.
Oh, lovely folks, those guys.
Yeah, they're great. And, then there's she whose name shall not be mentioned.
Oh, by the way, not to just shamelessly self-promote, but did you catch Matt Osborne's video about her based on one of my little rants from a couple of weeks ago?
I haven't yet. You know, I see a lot more of her than you might think I do. She's, she's like, there are a few different nationally renowned egomaniacs who also get a lot of coverage here at home. Bachman would be one of them, Pawlenty would be another, and then Brett Favre. I'm a little bit over the top on those three. On those three kids.
Well, Matt Osborne did a beautiful job with the thing I did a few weeks back about how she invented a new class of World War II vessel, the U-2 submarine.
Yeah.
And
I read the article about it. But,
yeah, City Pages or something picked it up there, I guess. And
yep.
I think there's much fun being had with it. And I hope I'd love to see Terrell Clark get in just because, frankly, anybody even vaguely to the left of Michelle Crazy Bachman would be fine by me.
No, you could. I mean, that's so much room. That's so much room.
Oh, that's the entire universe.
Yeah. She might have some. She might have some issues coming up, though. I mean, if she does, I don't know. Well, stranger things have happened. You know, I mean, I have not lived in Minnesota my whole life, but I was raised here. I'm your age. I'm 39. Is that right? Your same age?
No, I'm 47, but close
47.
Enough.
47. Yeah.
I used to be 39.
Yeah. And I will be 47.
So see how it works.
Yeah, but you know, I think.
Well, but I've got to ask a question though.
Sure.
You probably know that district, or at least know where it is on a map, and I don't.
Yep.
What kind of weird, sad, strange freaks keep sending that woman to office?
Well, we can go there. We can go there. It's actually it's the 6th district, and I lived out west for a while and then came back. I live in the 1st district, which is the whole bottom of Minnesota, and we're represented by Tim Walz. And the 6th district, unfortunately,
I mean, that's one of those Minneapolis St. Paul burbs, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the big sort of like part of the full diaper that bulges out of the northwest side of the cities.
What an image.
And yeah, well, that's how I see it. And a big part of it is Stearns County. Stearns County, Minnesota is extremely conservative. I mean, extremely conservative. I bet, like, a Minnesotan would probably think that it was, like, the South conservative. And I know that, like, I don't want to get into that debate, but, you know, the whole, like, North-South thing. But there's a group there that started in 1968 called the Minnesota Citizens Concerned with Life. And they've been wreaking havoc in Stearns County. There's still the Ku Klux Klan in Stearns County. That's the district that she covers.
You know, I remember a lot of years ago, or not a lot of years ago, but a couple of years ago, seeing a photograph of some kids in Minnesota standing in the back of a pickup truck with a Confederate flag.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about that kind of district, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's not even, you know, another thing, too, you know, it's been interesting being back here. I've been back here since 2008. And there are people in my area where I live near Rochester, which is where the Mayo Clinic is, where you were asking about that, too, the Percy Harvin guy. He was at the Mayo Clinic during his off time getting some treatment for his migraines. And so I'm sure he's in good hands. But there are people here, even in my hometown, who only associate the Confederate flag with this, you know, like floating on the river, partying with my girls, this redneck philosophy, you know.
Oh, and they're all playing that awful song by the Kid Rock that merges,
yeah,
Sweet Home Alabama and
exactly.
Werewolves of London. Yeah.
Exactly.
You.
And so there's a lot of that here, and I, you know, I don't get it. I mean, I do, but I don't. I've been watching the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map, and things have changed just in the last year. We're very close to Iowa, and there were maybe like five hate groups that they knew of about a year ago. So that's up to 17, I checked today.
Yeah, I was going to say, growing like weeds, aren't they?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, growing up here, I didn't meet a person of color until I moved to Minneapolis when I was 19.
And that was Prince.
No.
I'm kidding.
It wasn't, actually. No. I have met him, but, you know, he's not very interesting. Not very interesting in person. But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's hard. It's hard for me because it's hard for a lot of other people. It's harder for a lot of other people, too. But Minnesota is just like, you know, remember that blue dot in 1984 in the middle of the map of the United States?
Yes.
Yeah, that was us. And I don't think that if that happened today that that would be the case. In fact, I know it wouldn't. It's gotten extremely conservative. And it's really much like Oregon, where I lived before, where there is a liberal core, you know, a liberal progressive core, and just a basic DFL core, which, you know, I don't think they have that anywhere else, but the Democrat Farmer Labor Party?
Yeah, that's basically the Democratic Party of Minnesota, right?
Yeah, it's still called the DFL, and every farmer I see, everybody's land I drive by down here, they've got signs up, all Republican. And, you know, my grandfather would just kick him down.
Yeah. Well, you know,
what are you thinking?
And very few people realize that the origins of the so-called progressive movement took place on a lot of Midwestern farms.
Yeah, and in a lot of Midwestern flour mills and a lot of meat districts and a lot of stuff like that. I mean, as far as, like, union activity and, like, no, we're not going to take it anymore. You know, we're labor. You can't do this to us. And a lot of people did a lot of work a long time ago, and it seems like everybody here, either they're not hearing about it or they've just flushed it because it's very frustrating.
Or perhaps, I mean, you know, the thing that gets all over me half the time is that there's a lot of people who are tuned out, and the only thing they've got time for, you know, guys who come home at the end of the day and, you know, maybe that because they're working the second job or whatever, they got time to get one can of beer down, watch 15 minutes of SportsCenter, and then it's to bed and get up and do it again. Women the same way. And then there's a bunch of that demographic that for some reason or another those 15 minutes in front of the tube, 30 minutes in front of the tube are 30 minutes with Fox.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then it's all over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and it's got to be frustrating as can be for you to sit there and watch a state that had a decent liberal progressive infrastructure, sort of sliding down the a greased path to perdition.
Yeah, it is. It's very frustrating. I mean, I just like most people, you know. I mean, I think on a micro scale, you know, when Wellstone died, it was like our Kennedy, you know? I mean, it was like our JFK. And
well, I think it was the nation's. I mean, not to co-opt your grief or anything, but
yeah.
I don't think we fully appreciated what we lost when we lost Paul Wellstone.
No.
Because there's certainly been no one rising to take his place. You know, I asked a couple of nights ago on the show, you know, what the hell ever happened to Russ Feingold over in Wisconsin? He's gone to ground because he's got a hellacious challenge on his hands.
Right. Yeah, and I think that, you know, I don't know what it'll be like when Klobuchar's up or even when Franken's up, because that'll be around the corner before we know it too. And I mean, if we can just squeak through this gubernatorial crap, I mean, the guy who is running on the Republican ticket is just horrific. And his name is Tom Emmer.
And oh, yes. Oh, he's nasty. Wasn't that the guy that wants to balance the budget by what something about waiters and waitresses?
Yes, he thinks that most people who wait tables for a living make
$100,000 a year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, they absolutely do. You know, those. That woman on the truck at the truck stop here on Highway 14, she's hauling it in, you know, serving those farmers on bottomless cup of coffee all damn day.
Yeah, so. and picking up that quarter when they finally leave.
Exactly.
But no, I know that Minnesota did have a strong base once upon a time. You know, back in the late 70s, David in Tennessee's telling me. That up in the Iron Range, there was a guy hosting a call-in show, and, you know, he was on the air, and he said, I'm a communist. And he was constantly hollering against the bosses, you know, up around Hibbing and north and east of Brainerd.
Yeah.
I guess that's gone, too, isn't it?
Brainerd?
Brainerd,
well, Brainerd
yeah.
is still there.
Well, but I mean, the attitude that this, I mean, is are there still deep pockets of serious liberalism, or is it all getting watered down all over the state?
Well, you know, I think it's probably being watered down all over the state. I think that even, I don't think that outside of Duluth and Minneapolis and St. Paul, and maybe Crookston, I'm not certain, because Crookston is just across the river from Fargo, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's all a movie.
Merge. I don't think that there is a big liberal pocket anywhere outside of those, and you know, because a large city doesn't guarantee it anymore either. I mean, we had Nazi, social, what is it, the new socialist something-something party doing an anti-immigration rally about 30 miles away from here. And I just lit into the local news because they said that they were socialists.
Excuse me?
And I was just like, excuse me, people. You need to do a little more work than this.
Isn't it amazing how Jonah Goldberg and Glenn Beck's little socialism as Nazism meme it just got legs in such a darn hurry?
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, we don't need to work anymore. We just, you know, pick up a word. We don't need to work. We don't need to research. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, another thing I just wanted to bring up, too, was, like, you know, you were talking about, I appreciate the fact that you bring up homophobia as much as you do, because as much as I listen to a lot of other shows, and I don't listen to them as much anymore, for a long time, even at the beginning of Air America Radio, nobody would really talk about GLBT stuff. And they didn't have that many callers that would call in and talk about it. I know that I remember being disappointed, you know, just again and again and again by that. But I really appreciate that you bring it up as, you know, as often as you do. And I know that you have listeners like myself who are LGBT. And I think, you know, the net neutrality thing is a huge issue, and I was so happy to hear you talking to Sandra about it. And you can add me to the list of people who'd like to marry Sandra. And I
take a number.
Yeah, I know I can take a number, but we have the house music connection.
You may get a check mark. I don't know that.
Yep. Exactly, Chicago Urban House. I'm there. So. But I, you know, the net neutrality thing is super, 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 super important. There's so many things going on, but that is it. Because, you know, when I was growing up here, like I said, I didn't meet a person of color until I moved to Minneapolis at age 19. I didn't know. The only lesbians on TV were the ones that were on the Donahue show, and they wore dark glasses and wigs.
Yeah.
And kids now have the internet. They can find out all of this stuff, and I just hope that, you know, I hope that that stays open for us.
Well, you know, that's one of those elements of things that, in our own little way, we'd like, that we aim to change, because, you know, we talk about this in terms, you know, I can't bring myself to refer to me and an audience, because there's something just wrong about that. And consequently, the family metaphor is what presented itself, and the whole goal is to close the distance, because the right wing control of everything. One of its, I think, deliberate goals was to make sure that, you know, you filthy liberals, make sure you know that you're isolated and be quiet and don't stand up and don't talk. You know, we'll tolerate your existence as long as we don't know you, because and at the risk of over-talking this, the closet is a place that society for thousands of years has relegated persons of alternative sexuality or different sexuality or however one wants to put it. But we live in a time and a place now where all of us are, get in there. I don't care if you're heterosexual, get in the closet because you're liberal,
right?
And I ain't going. And I'm toward that end, anybody that's still in there, you know, here, take my hand. We'll all know we can live out here.
Yeah.
But we can only do it You know, as long we can only do it if we all stand together, whether it's LGBT or environmentalists or labor people or the education issues, women's issues, reproductive health, what have you. It'll only happen when we all stand together. Because otherwise, we're living in a sort of the political apartheid state of don't ask, don't tell liberals. And I want nothing to do with that.
I think the one I was thinking about mostly was Ed Schultz, because he would be on for 3 hours and it would not a peep.
Well, at the risk of stepping on some toes somewhere, and I apologize if I do. I was having a conversation earlier today, the person with whom I was having the conversation that goes by the board. But I started looking up, and it was because of Matt Osborne's post called Greek Democracy yesterday over at Crooks and Liars that it just got huge, huge participation and back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
We've got this thing going on where three of the leading lights of the so-called leading lights of the so-called liberal movement are people who came in out of the cold, so to speak. You know, because what was it, 30 years that Ed Schultz was on the air in North Dakota trying to be the upper Midwest's answer to Rush Limbaugh, right?
Yeah, well, I guess. I didn't hear him before he was on, carried on Air America affiliates.
Right, well, but that's
that was
where
any reason for me to listen to him.
You know, he had some sort of right. He had some sort of road to Damascus moment. Then there's Arianna Huffington, and Arianna Huffington was a rock ribbed conservative, going back to the mid '90s when they paired her up with Al Franken. Al was the liberal, and she was the conservative in a strange little show called Strange Bedfellows. And then, you know, Marcos Melitzis will tell you that he was a conservative and the pro-military conservative, yada, 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 until he decided he just couldn't be conservative anymore.
Yeah.
And you want somebody out there who's been what he or she is all along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, conversions are nice and everything, but...
I'm a little wary.
Yeah. How can you not be?
Yeah.
I mean, bless his heart, Ed Schultz has a brother who's still a non-union contractor.
Yeah.
You know, for all he talks about, you know, labor unions and good on him for doing it, his brother's a non-union contractor.
Yeah.
And so you can't help but make you a little wary.
He, you know, I think he serves his place in this way that, you know, his tone and his timbre and everything can draw in someone who is used to listening to Rush Limbaugh. But I mean, you know, because if you were flipping through the stations, and down here there actually is just there isn't a progressive radio station in this part of the state. You have to be on the internet to hear it.
And you know, I know a little. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say I think that, you know, in that respect, I think you could get tricked into listening to him. And a lot of the stuff, the language he uses and the, you know, the guy's got a southern accent.
Well, that's a southern accent to you.
Well everything is a southern accent to us, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, Kansas City is a southern accent for somebody from Minnesota, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
People in Iowa who have them.
Because, see, people like me listen to Ed and go, oh, that's upper Midwest. That's broadcast standard.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. And that's been one of the things that I've preached all along is that if we're really going to build a resurgent liberal progressive movement in this country, we've got to have a variety of people talking to America in the voices that they understand.
I don't understand him, and I don't think a lot of other. I've seen it discussed here, and we're like, what is that? Is it Texan? What is that? Because it doesn't sound Minnesotan, and it doesn't sound northern Minnesotan at all. So, and
right.
I think he went to school somewhere. Didn't he go to school in Texas or something? Anyway, whatever. It's your show. What am I talking about this for?
No, it's our show, doggone it. See, that's the whole thing.
What I mean is, it's you're hosting this show. That's what I meant. So.
Well, anyway, that's the illusion. But my goodness, what a wonderful conversation this has been. Please don't be a stranger.
I won't, and anytime you have any questions, about, you know, why people are losing their brains in Minnesota.
Absolutely. We'll put up the big horn bat signal and you can because you know after what went down in Vegas and everything, I don't know if we're going to go next year. But
yeah.
You know, Netroots Nation is in Minneapolis next year. And like
well,
I said,
it'll be good for you.
I've never seen that neck of the woods. You know, I'll ask and see if any of my colleagues in the struggle against mountaintop removal think we ought to be there and because I think we get a lot of good out of it that way. It's just a lot of stuff didn't work in Vegas, but I've had some conversations with them. And yeah, a lot of stuff didn't work in Vegas. It was just nasty. But I've never seen.
You do have to come to Minneapolis. I think you'd be very surprised, and I think you'd feel very, very, very welcome and very comfortable.
Oh, I'm told that Minneapolis in June is a lovely place.
It is. Not in July, not in August, but in June it's fine. It's like southern hot here now.
Oh, wow.
Southern hot and humid.
Oh,
yeah.
You get and about this time of year, what, you get the mosquitoes the size of eagles?
Yeah. Pretty much. We don't have them too bad down here because it hasn't rained a lot, and there isn't a lot of standing water in the fields. But there are lots of lakes.
So I'm told.
But, yeah, you should, if you want to get a gander of Minneapolis, just check out MinPost or Minnesota Progressive. That'll give you a feel. Those are two websites. They'll give you a feel of what's going on here. I mean, that whole RNC thing, pretty atypical, really. You know, with what happened there. But, I think you should definitely plan on coming.
Okay, well...
You know, I'll come and visit you.
That'll be fun.
I'll bring you some bars. I don't want to take up any more time. It's really, really great to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And I appreciate it.
I love first-time calls, and I hope it won't be the last.
No. And hello to everybody out there who I've enjoyed listening to forever. And... That's all.
Okay, great. You take care.
Once again, you have a good night.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. And we roll onward. Now, see, for those of you who have never called in, let's just make something clear here. You'll notice that was a first-time caller, and she survived quite nicely. We haven't lost a caller yet, except through my button-pushing ineptitude. But you can do that, you know? You can. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
Doing well.
I'm on. Is Sandra already been on? I had to leave.
No, she hasn't. No, she hasn't.
Well, I'm going to shoot her.
What?
Well, you know, yesterday we were talking about him. You were talking about Hemingway.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll read a short story about him. So I remember one.
Yeah, it, very short. That's it.
I'm kidding, yeah.
I'm sorry, Juanita, you're kind of breaking up there. I missed that.
I said, I'm just kidding.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. We know.
I mean, I wasn't mad with her. I thought that was funny. Because I thought, well, maybe I'll read a short story about him. And that's what I found, and I thought, what?
Didn't realize it was going to be that short.
No, but that was funny. I wanted to say a little bit about, we had our voting today.
How did it go?
Well, we don't know yet. I haven't heard any
returns. Oh, that's true, too early.
I'll have to turn some on. Where I go to vote went about 1:30, and they said I was a 79th voter. And they hoped they would have 100. And I thought, oh, my God. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't know how big it is, but there should be a whole lot more than 100 people. You there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Well, I don't know if it's hopefully or not. I don't know what voter turnout's going to mean down in Florida because... I've heard about so many weirdos and so few normal people actually running for office.
We've got them, Bob, I'll tell you. Anyway, I wanted to say a little bit about Glenn Beck.
Yes, please.
I was listening to Young Turks last night, and piece brought up the point that I had forgotten about what Glenn Beck said about the 9/11 families about a couple of years ago.
Yeah, what, crybabies? He hated them. He was disgusted with them. He was sick and tired of them.
And it took him less time to hate the Katrina victims. And he's going to, Washington. He claimed he didn't know that's when that August was the month that Martin Luther King made his speech in Washington,
right.
I Have a Dream. And, but anyway, Jenk is going to really start pressing on that. And if you had that clip, it'd be good if you could play it, I think. He said that he's going to try to get people, when they see Glenn Beck, to say, get. The way he said it is funnier. But anyway, then I'm going to bring up another thing about China. They've had, like, I don't know how many tragedies at least the past few months. And today they had a plane crash. They've had floods. They've had mine catastrophes. They've had earthquakes.
Yeah, what, they average about 30,000 deaths a year in their coal industry alone?
Well, it's like they've got something every day, you know, and you don't hear, they don't talk about it on the news as I know about. Do you hear much of that?
Well, what, on American news? No. No, we're not interested. Not as long as Lindsay Lohan's mama's out there saying, she's not going to die.
Now they've got a great big traffic jam that's expected to last for days. Can you imagine?
And the thing is, all of the, Juanita, when we look at all these disasters that, you know, from, I mean, they're poisoning their own babies, okay? I think we talked about that Friday night.
About the milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, before that, there was the poison in the formula that actually killed the babies. Now they're just growing breasts on them at 14 months.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But these are all signs and symptoms of the early stages of capitalism running amok through an economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the same sort of things happened here. Massive industrial disasters, inability of the infrastructure to keep up with the growth of the population. And you know, they're trying not to grow the population. They know they're in trouble.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. China's in a race against itself.
Yeah. Well, there was, I heard some calls this morning on the journal, C-SPAN, and one guy said that all this is to wipe us out, get rid of the excess, because the rich people don't eat the kind of food that we have to eat. And it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it does.
They don't care, you know, like with us, they don't care if we live or not because they know they got all these other people they can get to work for nothing and that they won't mind it or won't complain. And, you know, I mean, why should they care if we live long, how long we live? They don't care. But anyway. You heard what the Speaker of the House to be, he thinks? Or the Speaker of, oh, no, the Speaker of the Senate to be.
Oh, Mitch McConnell?
No, I guess I'm mixed up. Yeah, the other guy, the orange guy.
Oh, Pumpkinhead Boner? Yeah, the Speaker of the House wannabe.
Yeah. He said that when he's president, when he's over that, you know, he's not going to be running it like anybody before, including Republicans. But it doesn't say what he'll do. I think we have an idea.
Oh, I think we do. Among other things, the area where the speaker stands, you know, the speaker's podium position in the House, Juanita, will have an entire bank of tanning lights over top of it, suspended from the ceiling. And I don't know, he may institute mandatory bulb tanning for every member, at least every Republican. So that, you know, the Democrats and what few liberals there are will be all sad and sorry and pale and can be spotted from a mile away. You know, they want to be able to pick us out real easy.
Yep.
Well, all seriousness.
No, we know what John Boehner as the Speaker of the House would be. It would be nothing but 24/7 bowing, scraping, and kowtowing to the moneyed corporate interests that already. It would be the same, only more than what we've got.
Mm-hmm. You are correct, sir. You are correct. Well, listen, I'll let you go, and you have a good evening. And
I hope everybody who got your vote wins, Juanita. It will be, you know, I guess, I know a lot of people are looking at the Senate race and everything. You know the guy I'm paying attention to, and this is more November than it is primary. I just want to make sure that Alan Grayson gets back to Congress.
Oh, yeah, isn't he wonderful? Oh, my God, if we had a ton of like him. Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't mind having him for president. I want a president that'll stand up for us. I want, you know, that they offered a job to that lady, you know, that...
Shirley Sherrod.
She turned it down. She said she might be available for consultation on race relations. But she turned it down.
Good on her.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame her. But, you know, here, like, all Glenn Beck has to do is one little thing, and so-and-so's fired. And yet, that guy that's supposed to be representing the president to the press club, to the press people, he's just putting us down like nobody's business. And I don't appreciate it.
Oh, Gibbs? No, I got your email last night saying that he should be fired, and I agree.
He's just lost it for me. And, you know, I don't think that they handled the way they did Helen Thomas too nicely. I thought that was rather abrupt.
Yes.
To put it mildly.
That was a lynching, to put it less mildly.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And I've got no respect for him whatsoever, and especially since, I mean, I know Dean's not perfect about the...
No, that was a big stupid mistake on his part, you know, talking about the not a mosque, not a controversy.
Yeah. But anyway, you have a good night, and tomorrow you won't be home?
That's right.
Tomorrow is the night before the surgery?
Tonight is the night before the surgery.
Oh, she's having it in the morning?
Yeah, we got to be there at 6:45.
Oh, it's one of those things. You used to go in the night before. It's all over, ain't it?
Oh, yeah. There's every reason to believe that she'll probably be home tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, did their blood get okay, or did?
They loaded her up with iron and said she's good to go. They called today and said, "Come on down."
Okay. Well, like I said, I hope everything goes well and it'll be a big success.
Yeah, modern American medicine. Come on down. You're the next contestant on The Surgeon's Hands Aren't Shaking.
Okay.
You take care, Juanita.
All right.
Bye now.
Good night.
Good night. And onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Godzilla greetings. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, what's happening, Spike?
Oh.
I finally found the follow button on my Twitter, so, you know.
I just did that to break your chops.
Oh, I know. I need a Learning Annex class about Twitter or something.
The problem is Twitter is more under 40 friendly. So there's a lot of 30 and 20-somethings also hiding from their parents who have Facebook accounts on Twitter these days. So, but I actually sent you an interesting link through its DM, because I read a lot of newspapers using Twitter, actually, from all over the country. And it happened to be in a local paper, the Express Times, the same paper, by the way, that had the letter to the editor that caused the Secret Service to go look for that old man.
Right.
The story is about this guy who was a priest in Bethlehem, and it turns out now he got in trouble because he was also working at a casino, the Sands Casino in Bethlehem, where I did pretty good actually there not too long ago. And, he was helping run, people get the counterfeit cards to use at the tables there to cheat. So he gets in trouble for that, and then while they're investigating him, sex offense allegations come forward. He was at least two girls over the years that were underage he was doing things to. And I given that, because I didn't know what was going on with the surgery, I'd actually submitted that as an early submission for your prayer meeting Wednesday. So perhaps you could, I'm sure it'll become a better, bigger story as time goes on. So when you get a chance to read that, that's a good prayer meeting Wednesday type of story. Although certainly, hopefully everything goes great tomorrow. So glad finally Agnes can have her surgery. I know this has been dragging on for a while. You know, our quick private system at work, I might add. You know,
yes.
a quick private system who isn't too afraid to destroy your credit while you're waiting for assistance or things like that. Because I'm having my own issues with...
Oh, yeah, they can move with real speed when it's something that matters to them, you know? No doubt about it.
It's money, yeah. When it's money, it's not tomorrow. It doesn't matter, you know, they're making you wait, make conditions worse while you wait. They operate like the mob, basically.
Ding, 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 toaster for spy.
Yeah, only the mob would give you surgery in a more timely manner than the healthcare industry. The healthcare industry who has the most idiotic name because they neither care about your health or just care about you. It's all about money.
And they're not particularly industrious if it doesn't involve making money.
Yeah, well, exactly. But that goes into our whole social problem in this country. There's just no pride in anything. You know, there's no pride in companies. That's why people do unscrupulous things to make a lot of money and then split. There's no pride nationally. That's why, A, we do so poorly in the Olympics, and B, because, I mean, if you look at the worst that happened to Toyota Motor Company in North America is they let the Americans take over its operations in North America. You know, if you look at how outside of this country, how cultures think, they would be embarrassed to behave in the way that we do. And the spill in the Gulf of Mexico is a great example. Not only does it debunk the rights talking points, government can't do anything because, you know, we let private business handle that debacle, and they were as equally inept as government, which means the bigger problem that no one wants to talk about is we as a country kind of suck right now, and no one wants to live in this reality. You know, and there's many reasons why we suck, but number one is greed. A lot of it comes ultimately back to greed in one way or another. Why? You know, because everyone's so worried about money in this country. They're not worried about pride. They're not worried about community. Not worried about the future. It's all about where's my bleeping money. I mean, that has become the American mentality, no matter where it is, and it's a disease no one wants to admit we have it. So it's almost like the genital warts of our society.
Ew.
The greed that has just destroyed this country. I mean, if you look at how things operate in Wall Street, that's like a guy running around intentionally giving STDs to people, the way Wall Street operates.
You've got your hands on a metaphor there that's really working for me. It's a little tough around dinner time, but it works, Spike. It really works.
Yeah, well, I've never been good at sugarcoating things. That's why I probably will never truly hold a real public office beyond the Democratic committee man. I won by one write-in vote because I was the lone man who was serious when I wrote my name, and the other guy who did it didn't really want it. And because no one came out to the primaries this year in Pennsylvania, especially in this area, it was pretty easy to become a committee man in the Democratic Party and Republican Party by just being the 188 who wrote your name in. But like I had said earlier, that there was also the state representative who, he was going to have more Democrats write his name in than just one. So I put in the Stringfellow Hawk, the Jan Michael Vincent character, against him for that office. And spied him in the official tally. Because whenever I'm feeling down, the reruns of Airwolf always bring me up during the day. When I have no job. The bad acting and the bad editing from CBS. And the other thing, you could almost call it an exclusive here. I don't know how many people he's told this story to. Last Thursday, Ken Jaworski came to the County Democratic Party meet, and he spoke for a little while. And he painted a real doomsday scenario for September of 2008, saying basically the two options they were most seriously throwing around to handle what was about to happen was what they did and giving the monies to the banks so that, even though we know how bad the banks are, that at least the whole thing wouldn't collapse. And the other option they were looking at was not giving the monies to the bank and what to do when everything collapsed. And their plans were entailing basically sending three quarters of Fort Bragg up to the Beltway to protect the White House and the Capitol building. They figured that the government could guarantee with the, if everything collapsed money wise, that, we could all have food for about 3 weeks. And, so apparently they really, really, really thought about, of all things, declaring martial law in September of 2008, which you should have seen the jaws drop in the room. I don't know if Kandrorsky with his old age is getting a little crazy and telling us this, or there's shit going on down in the Capitol we couldn't even dream of in conspiracy theories. I don't know about anyone else. I know for those at my table from my township, the thought that the government seriously considered martial law is a slightly nerve-wracking thought. That's how people like Augusto Pinochet come to power, is when you have martial law. That's how you lose democracy. Like, is it really that possible? We were that because of greed, once again.
No, it's hard to run back from that stuff.
Right. We really came really close to losing a lot more than just the economy in that crisis. And by the way, I also, I must tweet too much to keep throwing by the way to start every sentence, but I ramble much more than 140 characters on the phone. The other thing is today saying we're at a, I've heard 10-year low, 15-year low, and used sale homes or previous owned sale homes, whatever term you want to use for that. What I find funny is they mentioned there's almost just shy of 4 million homes unsold right now in America because the economy sucks. But that's the ones realtors have. And what people don't understand is when things get foreclosed, realtors don't have them in their hands anymore as a home to count as sold or available. So things, this town here is ravished. I mean, this town, my town here is heavy on people who came here from New York, mainly Brooklyn and Bronx, the poorer parts of New York. They're mainly Hispanic or African American. Well, actually, African American's a real bad term around here because a lot of them are from the Caribbean, and that's a, don't tell someone from Jamaica they're African American unless you want to get smacked. They're Jamaican. So, you know, be it what it is, and what we know now about these predatory loans that were out there, thanks to people like Pat Toomey, that this town really got right. Especially people from New York City came up here and thought they were getting great deals on houses that they're really paying way too much for. They really weren't worth anything in this town. No, but when you live in New York City and then you come and you see kind of a rinky-dink house and they say, oh, it's only $200,000. Only $200,000. You know, the locals here think you're smoking rocks. But, you know, when you're comparing it to real estate value in New York City, you don't know how to kind of compare reality. And so a lot of them bought houses that had huge loans on them, and a lot of them foreclosed. The one next door to me, the end of September, is up for auction. They had to board up the windows on the side. The one had been removed, like, last October, and whoever was in possession of it, or I don't know, I guess the county, ignored it for the longest time. And, you know, this town is loaded with foreclosures. And, there are so many of these houses I've seen firsthand without getting into too much detail that they're not in possession of a real estate office. They're in possession of the sheriff's office or of a bank. And I wouldn't be shocked if we could double the number of how many homes are basically vacant waiting for someone to move into them. There's 4 million that people probably
have. Well, it's just like the unemployment numbers.
Right, they only count who are actually getting money from the government. They're not counting the people that they've kicked off the rolls at this point. We're in a depression, plain and simple. Whether or not we can face that reality, we're very bad at facing reality in this country. We like to watch shows that are quote
They call themselves reality. I was going to the same place you did, Spike.
Yeah, But we don't seem to want to ever really deal with reality. That's why people like me are like the worst candidates for political office, because I'll actually come out and say what it is, and no one really wants to hear what's going on, generally. But, yeah, the sad reality is, I mean, I'm on unemployment now. And you know, come fall, I might be off it, and where am I going to go? I mean, I'm competing with people who have kids and they can work any schedule, and I'm kind of slightly on the downside in that, you know, I have to work around the college schedule, so right there, when they look at, you know, applicants who can go 7 days a week, any shift, or, you know, they can't work Monday and Wednesday night and Friday mornings, yeah, guess who gets called first? And it's impossible for me to get called for a job, which, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not a freaking idiot. When the economy was great, anytime I was ever offered an interview, I was offered a job. Only once out of all the interviews I've ever had, at the end of the interview, did they not offer me the job in my whole life. I mean, I've done an interview and decided during the interview I don't want to work for the schmuck and turned them down. I mean, there was the time you could do that in this country.
Yeah, that day's gone.
Yeah, there was a time in this country where if you were being mistreated at your job, you could find a better job. Now you just have to kind of bend over and hope they use enough lube on you. I mean, that's the state we've been pushed into it.
But Spike, that's the state that the Republican Party and the conservatives want. They want a buyer's market in employment. The only way that conservative policies, whether it's Milton Friedman or any of the rest of the goons, works is if the whole thing is predicated on cheap labor and a desperately terrified workforce.
Yeah, well, as a Democratic committee man, I would just like to add, that's also what the DLC, or which was the Terry McAuliffe, that was DLC, right? Leadership?
Yeah, well, he was DNC at one point.
Well, that too. But, you know, the Clinton crowd, you know, even for a large part, the Kerry crowd, you know, these people, the corporate Democrats, the corporatists, as a certain unlikable independent likes to refer to them. And it's the reality. I mean, Bill Clinton's from Arkansas, and let's look at what's one of the biggest companies out of Arkansas, you know, Wally World, and, you know, yeah, you speak it in great length of how bad they are. So obviously the Clintons are definitely big business Democrats, and I'm glad a lot of their supporters aren't quite as powerful in this area as they once were. But what it really boils down to is, and yeah, I'm a Democrat because I had no other choice.
I'm gonna get calls. You just said I'm a Democrat because I have no other choice, and somebody's going to call and say, well, why don't you be a Green?
Yeah, and then be irrelevant every primary season here. At least I can vote in the Pennsylvania Democratic primaries right now. I mean,
And that's ultimately the problem. I'm not making fun of the idea of being a Green. It's just that nobody has done the hard work of setting up the infrastructure.
The only independent party in this country that has any sort of weight, And really, if you look at what their name is being used at this point, it doesn't even stand for what it once did, was the Libertarian Party. That's the only maybe third party that ever really did any work in large part of their own.
Well, to be fair, in the early part of the 20th century, the Socialist Party was quite strong.
Yeah, and but in the modern days, you know, the post-World War II era, that's the only real independent. And before I forget, let me just also mention, because, you know, Glenn Beck likes to say, I'm a libertarian. And, you know, he's anti-gay rights. He's anti-choice. He's anti-drugs. So I fail to see how he's a libertarian. He's a conservative who wants to keep his ratings higher. But I have to at least laugh as much as he's a kook and a crackpot, and his son isn't psychotic, that Ron Paul and the Made For Covering the Republicans Behind News story at least coming out, and I was actually surprised he didn't go against them, but at least if you are, because Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, who's a libertarian, who's fiscally conservative and bad on many things involving, you know, money and spending and all, but being he was really a true old school libertarian, was very socially liberal, from the state of Minnesota, quite on social issues, the exact opposite of Michelle Bachmann. And, you know, it's interesting that there are at least a few of them out there that might still be for, you know, government not crimping on people's religion, maybe leave the gay people alone. But, yeah.
That's the thing. That part of the Libertarian Party was largely replaced by pissed off Republicans who didn't want to be called Republicans after George W. Bush, but still hoped to smoke dope freely someday.
Actually, a lot of them that didn't like H.W. Bush, who were big Buchanan fans, too.
Well, there's that.
The Reform Party was also a big part of that. But, yeah, a lot of the independent movements got really kind of polluted around the time of
again, the thing that I point out is that, you know, I'm disgusted with the Democratic Party. And for the first, there is a real risk. I said it the other night, Spike. There is a real risk, a likelihood. There's a genuine likelihood that come November, I'm going to vote for Republicans for the first time in my life. And I'm going to do it. And look, this is our nightly moment of shallowness. And if you can give me a good reason, or anybody else listening to the program can give me a good reason, I won't. But I haven't found that good reason yet.
Well, I'm almost
to the point where I feel like, you know what, as opposed to Joe Manchin, whose position, why not just vote for somebody, why not just vote for a Republican when there's no difference between the two?
Well, that's exactly what was our problem here in this county. For the old school Democrats in this county could never win an election because they were trying to be exactly like the Republicans. And how do you say to someone, the donkey is our mascot? I mean, you need something stronger than that as your argument, you know, because we're blue, not red. Let's be real. If that's
red makes me angry.
Black and silver party. But, we're on the upside. You never see Democrats at conventions wearing hats with elephant horns that look more like something a guy keeps in his underwear on their head.
You guys work in the blue side of the street tonight. I mean, I just got an email in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, what's Spike talking about? Enough lube. They're screwing us with our pants still on.
It's like when Mike Tyson went to prison, I guess. But, and the other thing I have to mention, I don't want to yell, it's too loud. When I was down in central Virginia, I feel like an alien in my own country once I go so far south in a Mason-Dixon in this country. I find it interesting. And by the way, I actually had to, not because I was forced, I actually did it kind of as a favor to the person I was visiting, and because quickly I discovered I was getting weird looks in town. I temporarily removed my suspect stick from the back of my car. That really is, they are some really frightening parts of this country.
Oh, speaking of which, you know, you've got Toomey out there today saying, I never said I was for privatizing Social Security. You know, that part where I said I was for privatizing Social Security, that was my evil twin. I never said that. I mean, it's funny. I mean, is he out there? Because, you know what's going on in the hustings in Pennsylvania far more than I do. Is Toomey still out there talking about the little, you know, the poor little fetuses?
My personal favorite, he's kind of talking about that stuff. He's going around Pennsylvania in a little RV with a Penn State sticker in the back window, I guess, to seem like he's one of us.
Well, I guess he's just throwing away the Pitt vote then, isn't he?
And, I guess you're not crying about that. But I just said someone from Pennsylvania found that offensive that he's trying to hide the fact he's really not from Pennsylvania. But, his big thing, his big campaign talking points is less government, more jobs. And, of course, I have to laugh because if you make less government, that means you lay off government employees. So where are the more jobs? You're laying people off. Where are the more jobs? Right.
No, I get it. But the guy's a loon. Oh, I never said I wanted to privatize Social Security. Where's the quote? I got it right here. This was just precious. I saw it earlier today. Just hold on a minute, because this is too loony to let it fly by. This is loony right up there with T. Boone Pickens out there bitching about the fact that we didn't steal all of Iraq's oil. I ran naked around the room over that one. Where'd it go? But he said, I'm not saying we want to privatize. So here it is.
I want a reform within Social Security that would give them the opportunity, young workers, to take a portion of their payroll tax and actually save that and own that and allow that to accumulate over the course of their working years. You know, that's hilarious because, I'm still sort of existentially moved by what I saw in Vegas. And, once you've set the chip down, everybody knows. You may not touch the bet, sir. Don't touch the bet, sir.
Well, the Republicans...
And that's the thing. You know, where Pat Toomey is, it's going to be your money. But, once it's in the free market, once the wheel starts spinning, don't touch the bet, sir. Because here in a minute, it's not going to be your money anymore.
Well, his base and the conservative base, the big thing is it's kind of short attention span. You had... The Daily Show, by the way, The Daily Show pointing out, the connection between these evil Iman and his group and, Fox News.
Oh, Radio Rwanda?
The Kingdom Group? Or I forget what the name of the, co-owner with Rupert Murdoch and his
Prince
group.
Ali bin Talwal or something like that,
Yeah. And of course they show pictures of if you can go on the internet after the show, whatever, and see the video from last night's Daily Show.
No, it's precious.
How sad is it the Daily Show is the one breaking all these stories and not the real news world? It's a comedy show. It's basically someone competing against reruns of a Family Guy is doing a better job at bringing us the reality of these stories. Well, and of course, short attention span, they don't see that. There was also, Huffington Post had a picture of this evil guy and going back saying how evil he was and showing a picture of him with him. And, I think he was on his Fox News show today trying to claim it was a Photoshop. I've never met him. Their base is really that bad at doing homework and a Google check, which, by the way, was a punchline. From the Daily Show last night when they played that one from Fox and Friends saying she Googled something and this is what it means and she had the definition wrong still. Imbecile. Gretchen had to Google imbecile because she didn't know what that was. She had to Google it. And she was the only one that's smart enough to even think to search Google imbecile.
You mean when she could have just looked in the mirror?
Ba-dum-bum. Yes. Exactly.
Hey, Spike, great talking to you, brother. I got a roll, but, man.
It's good talking to you, and hope everything goes well tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Spike. I'll tell Agnes. You take care.
You too.
Bye now. And we've got to take a little bit of break because we've got the green news tonight, and I'm not going to blow by that because, it's the high point of my evening. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyle. So we'll do that, and we'll come back to your phone calls. I've got almost fully loaded phone lines. Randall writing in, he says, I don't have to settle for second best anymore, and that's why I'm a registered green, and I don't feel like I have to be on the winning team. At least they get the evil money out of politics. They don't have any. And I'm not going for the nuance or anything here, but my inclination is to stay with the Democrats solely because I want to see us start running people in primaries. I want to see liberals and progressives finally wake up and realize that the real elections are in the primaries. Because like I said, come November, if my choice is between John Racey, a right-wing freak who actually registers as a Republican, and Joe Manchin, a right-wing freak who registered as a Democrat so he could become governor, I feel inclined to vote for the more honest of the two. In that case, they'll both be junior senators, and they'll be relatively powerless. But look, John Racey's going to vote against any climate change bill. No, this is just West Virginia politics. John Racey's going to vote against any climate change bill. Joe Manchin's going to vote against any climate change bill. John Racey is going to try to protect mountaintop removal. Joe Manchin is going to try to protect mountaintop removal. John Racey is going to be interested in privatizing Social Security. Joe Manchin is going to be interested in privatizing Social Security. What's the damn difference? And it's largely the same thing with my member of Congress, Nick Rahal. Mountaintop removal now, mountaintop removal tomorrow, mountaintop removal forever, till the coal runs out. Well, that's what his Republican opponent's saying. At this point, I think the most I can do is just leave them blank. None of the above. And maybe that's the more honest vote. Because the idea of voting for a Republican really, really does just make me throw up a little bit in the back of my throat. Just does. Ugh. So we'll take a little break. And we'll come back with more of your calls. Like I said, I'll run through during the break. I'll run through and find out who is where on which lines. And it'll be like a real radio show where I know who's calling in. And so, you know, if you want to get in line, feel free to do so. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333, this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is indeed the Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, August 24th, 2010.
Egregious Egg Recall gets expanded. The Gulf Dead Zone gets expanded, too, while the Obama administration gets slammed for lowballing oil spill estimates. Plus, the world's longest traffic jam, 10 days and counting. Seriously, and you thought your commute was bad.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
3 million eggs have been recalled. I'd hate to be the guy in charge of getting them back into that chicken.
This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored in part by RawStory.com, your source and mine for real, up-to-the-minute investigative news and politics. Get the real story at RawStory today and every day at RawStory.com. Okay, Des, thousands of dead fish washing up in the Gulf. Oil still being found on beaches day after day, yet the media has gone home, moved on to other things. It doesn't exist. No worries left in the Gulf, according to the media.
But not according to independent scientists, but we'll get to that in a moment. We said in the opening, you thought your commute was bad. Try being stuck on a highway for 10 days. That's happening to drivers right now on a highway in China. Officials say it's due to road construction. Now, at the same time, and this is probably unrelated, the Chinese government has announced an initiative to boost the Chinese electric car market. $15 billion in additional investment over the next 10 years. Their stated goal, making China the worldwide leader in electric cars by 2020. Compare that $15 billion to the U.S.'s planned investment of $2 billion. Thousands of dead fish were found floating at the mouth of the Mississippi Delta, and scientists aren't sure of the cause yet, but suspect this fish kill was caused by oil from the BP disaster in the Gulf or lack of oxygen in the water as part of this year's larger-than-usual dead zone in the Gulf. Or both. The Gulf Dead Zone occurs every summer when oxygen levels in the water crash due to agricultural runoff from farms in the Midwest, levels that are too low for anything to survive. Record warm ocean temperatures have made this year's Gulf Dead Zone one of the largest on record. Meanwhile, independent scientists have slammed the Obama administration's official estimates of how much oil remains in the Gulf of Mexico. In a congressional hearing last week, a senior scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration acknowledged that the administration's claims that three-quarters of the oil is either gone or dispersed was kind of misleading to the public.
Probably about three-fourths would still be, I would say most of that is still in the environment.
So when they put out the news a week or so ago that all but 25% of the oil was gone, we didn't have to worry about it, the media went away, everything was fine, they were lowballing it? Administration was not telling us the truth?
They were giving a very technical explanation and presented it very badly, and the media ran with it. That basically that there was only 25% of the oil in the Gulf, but NOAA Administrator Jane Lubchenco said very clearly that 50% of the oil still exists. They just don't know exactly where all of it is.
Okay, and now we're hearing 75% of it, 80% of it still exists?
Right, that would be from independent scientists. But
even the NOAA scientists who put out this report are now admitting that the report was not peer-reviewed, that they were getting out the information as quickly as possible, but it really did mislead the public, didn't it?
Well, I don't think it's accurate to say that the administration lied. I think the key point is that when the administration said that a good portion of the oil was dissolved or dispersed, that didn't mean that it was gone.
Well, they did a fine job of misleading, however they did it. And the media have moved on, by and large, and yet the people of the Gulf are still down there fighting this problem.
The egg recall continues to grow.
There is no question that these farms that are involved in the recall we're not operating with the standards of practice that we consider responsible.
That was Food and Drug Administrator Margaret Hamburg talking about the massive egg recall. To get a sense of the scale of this, imagine an egg carton. Now imagine 32 million cartons, and you'll get an idea of the scale of the recall, now expanded to over 550 million eggs due to potential salmonella contamination. That's too late for the more than 1,000 people who've been sickened already across 22 states. They've all been tracked to just two massive industrial egg operations in Iowa with a history of violating state and federal regulations. New regulations went into effect a month ago, but that was too late to prevent this outbreak, as admitted by FDA Commissioner Margaret Hamburg, as you just heard. Now, critics are saying that this recall is just another example of how massive consolidated factory farming operations put even more consumers unnecessarily at risk, and this is explained pretty well by Robert Kenner, who's director of the documentary Food, Inc.
Ultimately, centralization has allowed us to create food that's cheaper today than it's probably ever been at any time in history. Unfortunately, there are costs that come with this centralization. And it's, you know, we've always had foodborne illness, but now we're more capable of getting more people sick.
Great. We can get more people sick at once. Good for us. Very efficient. For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Drop us email, love letters, hate mail, or even PayPal donations to greennews@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, foodie that I am, I find myself surprised that I've said absolutely nothing about the egg disaster. But what is there to say? You know, chicken eat, feed, chicken lay egg. Collect egg, you know, omelet, boom. And our corporatized food structure, our corporatized food oligarchy has even figured out a way to screw that up. Yeah, the yolk's on me, Lottie. Hey. But one of the things that I'm not hearing out of this multi-billion egg recall that has been carefully avoided in all the news coverage that I see, they make it so, well, Jesus, all the eggs are bad. Really? Are Eggland's Best eggs bad? Are organically raised eggs bad? Because I'm sort of suspicious. I'm betting they're not. There may actually be value in not feeding eggs, not feeding chickens things like, you know, ground, you know, soylent cow feed. There may actually be a benefit to that. There may be actually a benefit to not being cruel or trying to provide a decent life to the setting hens. Haven't seen anything about recalls of No, Eggland's Best? No, sorry. Organic? No, sorry. Enough of me. Let's talk about y'all. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Jim.
First, listen, I'm going to be brief. Brevity is the soul of wit, Oscar Wilde, right?
I thought it was Shakespeare, but...
No, it's Oscar Wilde.
I'll be darned.
Nonetheless, number one, first, all my best to your spouse.
Thank you.
Listen, she goes through her procedure. Number two, my heartfelt condolences to Brian.
Yes.
I believe they are angels sent by heaven to comfort us, and I really believe that with all my heart. You can agree or disagree on that, but that's how I feel. Thirdly, referencing the Fort Bragg thing with Washington, it would not be the first time that the military has been sent to take care of situations in Washington. Remember the bonus march and what happened?
Oh, absolutely.
With MacArthur when he went to Anacostia and literally drove those people out, burned their tents, and went in there with tanks. And, you know, these people were pretty defenseless. And, you know, number four, as far as voting Republican or whatever, that's your own thing. But if you vote Republican, you're doing exactly what they want you to do. They want you at least to have your chip on their table.
Yeah, they want me to give up on the system. I understand that.
Well, you know, Bob Gerda once said, one must either the anvil or the hammer be. And, you know, you get tired of being the anvil. But I can tell you one thing, which lasts longer, the hammer or the anvil?
Generally the anvil.
Yes, sir. And I take great comfort in that. I really do. I've been the anvil. I've been hammered. We all have. But we've lasted longer than the hammer and the people who wield that hammer. And that's all I have to say tonight, good buddy.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Well said, sir.
Good night.
Take care. Bye now. And I understand that. It's like understanding folks who want to vote, you know, who go and register green. You know, maybe in 100 years there will be they'll be fielding viable primary candidates. Maybe. Don't know. But it seems to me that the structure at least exists to go in and try to run viable primary candidates inside the Democratic Party. For my part, you know, I'm stuck in November. I think I was having a little bit of a fit of pique when I said I might as well vote for the Republican. I don't have that in me. But I can damn sure leave it blank. Because to vote for Joe Manchin is to vote for a Republican. And it's worse than voting for the actual Republican who's running. And I'm sure a lot of you are facing those kinds of things in your own states, where some mugwump Democrat in name only is your only choice besides some frothing at the mouth, tongue-speaking, floor-rolling, snake-handling freak on the other side. I guess leaving it blank is a vote. Two. Now, I won't be leaving anything blank on Saturday, the 28th. Oh, no. Hell no. Saturday, the 28th, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to vote for Ken Heckler. I've done everything I can to help get the word out about him in the last few weeks. Because this whole thing, this whole filthy special primary was designed solely for the benefit of Joe Manchin. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you would have expected to see out of Saddam Hussein's Iraq. That's what politics in this state is like right now. And if Joe Manchin wins the primary, and if Joe Manchin wins the general election, then we are thrown to the tender mercies of another coal crook, a guy by the name of Tomlin. Earl Ray Tomlin. You know, he's one of those guys that you get within 15 feet of him and your body begins to itch. And you're like, I gotta get a shower! And you scrub and you scrub and you scrub. You know, where's that floopy thing? The loofah or what? Get me 10 of those. I want to scrub till there's no skin left. You know, he's, you know, that kind of political filth. And I guess leaving it blank is a vote. And you know what? I'd be glad to cast my vote for somebody who was actually a Democrat. But outside of Ken Heckler running in this special primary, there aren't any. It's that simple. It's that simple. William says there must be some kind of use for a billion bad eggs. I can offer a few. Egg Fox News, egg the Rush compound, egg any and all politician who spouts one lie, egg the Hummer. I could go on forever, but you get the point. Yeah. And they're toxic. Hey, Rush, lick it up, buddy! Ooh, isn't that a Kiss song? I should have saved that for a bumper. Oh, well. Hey, the line's open if you want to jump in for the close of the program. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And we've got the Cossack. Hey, Cossack.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
Hanging in there. First and foremost, let me wish Agnes all the luck with tomorrow's procedure, and I hope to God she gets over it in a hurry.
The recuperation time is a bit of a booger, but it's supposed to be fairly straightforward.
I got my fingers crossed. I know what it's like, and she has my best of best wishes.
Thank you. Thank you, Cossack.
Yeah. I'll be pulling for her. Secondly...
And you know what I'll do? I will try to... I don't know if she's listening right now, but if News Ninja Susan is listening, I'll try to shoot her an email as soon as Agnes is out of the OR, and I'll tweet it and all of that other stuff, too. And that way the word can get around that, you know, we'll sound the all clear, as it were.
Feels good. And also, my very, very most heartfelt condolences to Brian. We go through that with our companions, and it's not easy. It never is. They are our friends. They are our companions in good times and especially in bad. And I know what he's going through. And, yeah, I really feel for him.
It hurts.
Unfortunately, I know what it's like. And further, I was stuck in the doctor's office today, which meant I was stuck watching phone news and trying not to gag or get up and throw something at the TV screen. And they had that idiot Stossel on there. And he's got a brilliant idea. Instead of having these 9-day-long traffic jams like we have in China, we just need to do away with street signs. No more stop signs. No more stoplights.
By God, he's at least an honestly insane libertarian.
Does this man have?
Did he really say get rid of? Oh my! That's
yeah.
Precious.
I mean, seriously, we should have toll roads everywhere, and then they would take care of everything, and it would be perfect. If only we privatize everything and have private toll roads everywhere you went. Because everybody knows the private sector knows how to take care of things. Really? Gee.
Yeah, that's especially true. You know, Pumpkinhead Boner was pissing and moaning earlier today. About the fact that federal workers make twice what the private sector worker makes, and that has been accelerated.
Oh, that's bull crap.
Well, it is, but the fact of the matter, what he's complaining about is that the federal worker has not been able to be preyed upon by the so-called invisible hand of the free market.
Well, yeah.
And then there's the fact that he's just plain old-fashioned lying.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard this crap over and over and over again since I was a kid. I mean, I grew up in D.C.